Hello, this is Vincent Kennedy McMahon reminding you to vote for the Sala Monster in the PodcastAwards.com sports category. Now listen, I know you're all a bunch of lazy millennial son of a bitches, so you got to go with me right now. We're going to do it together. Here we go. PodcastAwards.com. Scroll down on the right, see where it says sports? Now click on Sala Monster Sounds Off. Notice how Jim Ross didn't even make the top 10. Good. He's never going to be able to book my talent on that show. Anyway, click on submit at the bottom. Type in your name and email address. Oh, and you have to verify your email address.
You've got mail.
Just like that. Do it now. Don't make me kill my own creation. The Sala Monster Sounds Off.
You didn't create the Sala Monster Sounds Off, Vince.
Shut up. You're fired.
Let's help the Sala Monster out, everybody. Vote today. PodcastAwards.com.
Look at Reigns' t-shirt. Look at it. Read the words. I can, I will.
Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
If I got a $10 PayPal donation every time somebody sent me a tweet this week asking me if I saw that Max Landis Wrestling Isn't Wrestling video or the heel book trailer for WrestleMania, I'd be a millionaire. Yes, I saw both videos, and yes, they are awesome. You should check them out. But I'm sure you already have, because you've been tweeting me about it, so watch them again. This is episode 374 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 22nd, 2015. In case you didn't guess it already, I am the Sala Monster. You can listen to this podcast each and every week on thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and iTunes. And now I'm happy to announce that we can add Audio Boom to that list. The Sound Off is now available through the Audio Boom app and the embeddable players on Twitter and Facebook. I know Russell Brand just launched a new podcast on Audio Boom last month. They're really starting to branch out and expand, and very proud that the Sound Off can be part of that through Audio Boom, so I wanted to make that announcement here up front. Also, thank you to everybody for all your feedback to last week's Sound Off the Wagon special. And thank you to Noah Mark, Brian Blade, Webmaster Mike, Jared, the lovely Amanda, all for their help. I know a few of you were a little turned off by having six people on the show at once. It could be overwhelming at times. I think it's more that people are just so used to the one-man format of the show. You know, you start introducing other voices and it's kind of a shock to the system, but most of you seem to enjoy it, which is good, because as we say a lot about WWE, plans change. As many of you were aware, I was planning on watching WrestleMania at home this year, but as it turns out, I will be flying my ass out to California after all. Flying out on Friday, I will be joining my fellow horsemen out there, which means next weekend's podcast will be another roundtable episode, although I promise it won't be six people this time. We'll keep it to the usual two or three when we do these things annually. We already did early Mania predictions last week, so we'll run through the final card next weekend. There's even been some changes since last week's show. We'll talk about the Go Home episode of Raw that's coming up this Monday night, and all of our experiences up to that point out west, which will include, and this is what I'm most excited about, Friday is NXT at San Jose State University, and we will be in attendance at the NXT show. It'll be my very first NXT show. I'm very much looking forward to that. So we'll talk about all of that next weekend, and then possibly even record a WrestleMania post-show like we did last year, either later that night, maybe the next morning. So there may be two shows. I don't make that guarantee. It's a possibility there may be two shows. I'm not entirely sure yet, but there'll be at least one. The only kink in my plan here as I migrate out west for WrestleMania is that I don't actually have a ticket to WrestleMania. So I do have a ticket for Raw the night after. I do have a ticket for the Hall of Fame, like I said, NXT. I'll be at all those shows. I just don't have one for WrestleMania. I expect to be at the show. I hope to be at the show. But as of this moment, I do not have a ticket. So while I work on that, if you or anyone you know should have a need to sell off an extra ticket for WrestleMania, just shoot me a tweet, or send me an email to solemonster@gmail.com. Let me know, and we'll talk about it. I'm looking forward to it. Again, it's more just the fun of the experience. I always have fun when I go to WrestleMania. I've now gone to Mania the last 3 years. This will be number four. And it's kind of funny, you know, for as long as I've been a fan for, I never went to a WrestleMania before. Even when they had Mania at the Garden in 94, they had it again in 2004. I didn't go to either one of those shows. And it was only starting with 28 in Miami that I started to go. And it's a lot of fun, and I usually get to meet a lot of you guys out there, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure I'll meet a lot of you again this year. So it should be a fun time. Also, very important, you heard Noah Mark, thanks for his help at the beginning of the podcast. This is the final week for voting in the Podcast Awards, podcastawards.com. In fact, by the time many of you probably listen to this, it may already be over. The voting ends, I believe, at the end of the day on Tuesday. I know it ends Tuesday the 24th. I can't imagine it's midnight. It's probably midnight as in Wednesday morning. So you have all of Tuesday will be the final day to vote. And it's very important that you do so because we can't do this without your help. So if you go to podcastawards.com, you scroll down. We're under the sports category. We're up against some stiff competition. You pick the sound off. You go down to the bottom. Put your name and email in there. You will get a confirmation email to verify your vote. You have to click that link. Otherwise, it will not count. And I will tell you that sometimes even if I vote, for example, because there's other podcasts on there that I you know, cast a ballot for besides my own, you can run into a situation where you don't always get an email, and that just means it may not have taken. So you have to go back, vote again, and you will get that email. So if you're running into that issue, that's the reason why, and that's the workaround there. And that's it. You know, voting is over on Tuesday. I have no idea when they'll announce winners or anything like that. I know they have a ceremony out in Vegas in the middle of next month. So, you know what? Whatever happens, happens. But this is the last big push for the award. So any help on your part would be appreciated in that. If you like what you hear each week, please consider making a PayPal donation. You can do so on thesolemonster.com. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. $30 or more, and beyond the nickname, I will happily give your own podcast a quick shout-out as far as the name and the link to it. Has to be your own, and it has to be a $30 or higher donation. Just include the information when you make the donation. So I want to thank these people for their help this week. You guys are awesome. Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Dastardly Derek Smith, Tori All I Do Is Win Johansson, Travon the Cannon Clark, Mentally Unstable Matt Cotter, Man Up Manny Alcantara, Fast Blast Tim Banks, Truth or Dare Jason Hare, Jubilant Jessica Ohanian, Rambunctious Ronan Arts, Rapscallion Radley Curtis, Mitchell the Mercenary Montgomery, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, The Bogota Big Shot Fernando Leon, I love that name, and Agent of Chaos, Brian Terrell Ackerman. Happy birthday, buddy. So thank you to everybody who made a donation this week, and again, you can always do so on thesolemonster.com. It is entirely voluntary, but it keeps us going, so it's very much appreciated. And before we get into the news, and there is a lot of news to cover, including some sad news that we're going to start with, but before we get to that, I just have to mention this. One more special thing, and that is, we're heading into WrestleMania week. We are going to have, and this is exclusive to our store, it is exclusive to the Sound Off store on ProWrestlingTees.com. If you go to our link, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolemonsterSoundsOff, starting Tuesday, this Tuesday, March 24th at midnight, the beginning of the day, so this is, you know, an hour after Raw goes off the air Monday night, we are going to have a Mania Madness sale. Exclusive to our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. The sale is going to run all through WrestleMania week, straight through to midnight the following Tuesday, March 31st. So you have an entire week. You can use the discount code SOLO, S-O-L-O. That is the discount code that you use at checkout. You'll see a field to input a discount code. That's the one. You get 10% off your entire order. So no matter if you order one shirt, if you order multiple shirts, whatever that total is, you get 10% off starting Tuesday for the entire week as part of the Sound Off Mania Madness sale. So Take advantage of that, because we've got 19 different shirts up in the store, including the two new Champs or Chump shirts that went up the week before. And so you've got just a plethora of different shirts to choose from. And this is the time to do it. You can get 10% off. I don't know why you wouldn't take advantage of that. So ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff starting this Tuesday at midnight, running all week until the following Tuesday morning. It is the Mania Madness sale, exclusive to Sound Off listeners on ProWrestlingTees.com. Let's shift gears here and talk about something that was the big story this weekend, and it's a big story that's going to have a ripple effect, certainly on Lucha Libre now for many, many months to come, and that is the death of Perro Aguayo Jr. Perro Aguayo Jr., the son of the legendary Perro Aguayo, died early yesterday morning during a tag team match for the independent Crash promotion. There's been a lot of reports that it was a AAA event and a AAA ring. These are AAA talents, but this was not a AAA event. It was an independent promotion called Crash. The event was down in Tijuana. It was Perro Aguayo and Matic from TNA, TJ Perkins, against Rey Mysterio Jr. and Extreme Tiger, also known as Tigre Uno in TNA. He was only 35 years old, passed away. Just awful. Just awful, awful news. It's been an absolutely horrible week for the AAA promotion. First, you know, they had their big Rey de Reyes show, which is this annual tournament that they hold. It was delayed twice. It was supposed to take place last Sunday in an outdoor stadium. It got rained out. It rained so hard they had to postpone the whole thing to the next night. Then on Monday, they couldn't get the proper permit to run the show in a different arena because it was a national holiday and I guess all the government offices were closed. So they had to postpone the event again. And they postponed it until Wednesday. Finally, they were able to have the show on Wednesday. I don't think they had much of a crowd, but you couldn't expect them to. I mean, on a Wednesday night, the show was delayed twice. You're not going to have a great crowd. But before that, before the event finally took place on Wednesday, there was a bus accident involving some wrestlers and employees for AAA. And one of their employees, and she had worked for AAA for something like 20 years, a longtime employee. Her name was Irma Osorno. Want to mention her name here. She died as a result of her injuries in that bus crash. About a dozen other people had to be hospitalized, but I think they're all okay now. So you have a company that's grieving the death of this poor lady, and then this happens. You know, one of their biggest stars just dies from a freak accident in the ring on an indie show. Video of the incident, it's been all over social media. Just video after video after video everywhere. Not just our own Facebook group, but just all over Twitter, everywhere. There are videos from different angles of the match and what happened, and then the aftermath, and they're working on him backstage. I mean, really morbid stuff. I didn't post the link to the video on Twitter initially when I commented about it. I just didn't think it was appropriate. But I did watch it because I wanted to see, you know, what the hell happened. And it's not readily apparent exactly what happened here. You know, before the point that Perro Aguayo goes limp in the ring, and you could tell something is wrong, he takes a standing hurricanrana from Rey, and he goes through the ropes and out to the floor. Now, it looks to me like he was supposed to land in the ropes as the setup for the 619. He was a little too close to the ropes, and so he just went flying out of the ring. It looked like he may have hit his head on the apron, but again, it didn't really look like anything serious. As soon as he went out to the floor, he got right back up, climbed back into the ring, I think because he realized, oh shit, that wasn't supposed to happen. So he climbs right back into the ring. That's when Rey delivers a drop kick, hit him in the shoulder. Didn't hit him. Didn't look like it hit him directly in the neck or the face or anything like that. It hit him in the shoulder. And then he, you know, that sent him into the ropes for the 619. A spot that we have seen Rey Mysterio do a million times before. His throat may have hit the ropes when he, you know, when he landed in the ropes. It may have struck his throat, his neck, the whiplash. It sounds like the whiplash effect was the fatal blow. Just a total freak occurrence. The website MedioTiempo.com had a news report. They said the cause of death they cited was stroke caused by cervical spinal damage. I don't think that's been confirmed. In fact, there's a lot of conflicting reports out there right now. We don't know what happened. Supposedly, the doctor on scene says it was a cervical spinal injury, but the commission down there says it was a heart attack. Nobody seems to know for sure what happened. It sounds like it was something with the spine and the neck, and whatever happened, it was just instantaneous. According to the Wrestling Observer, the doctor on site said that Pero Aguayo still had vital signs on his way to the hospital, so he did not die in the ring, and that's a lot of other reports that have been out there, that he died in the ring. It sounds like he didn't actually die in the ring. He was still, you know, his body anyway, was still alive, and somewhere on the way to the hospital, if not at the hospital when they arrived, is when he officially passed away. This whole thing, it's all, you know, one of the first things I thought of, very reminiscent of Mitsuharu Misawa in Japan. He died about 5 or 6 years ago in a match. Ironically, it was also in a tag team match. And he got dropped on the back of his head. I think it was just a simple back suplex. Again, one of the most basic pro wrestling moves that you could pull off. And that was it. And he actually did die in the ring. There was nothing that could be done for him. I think it was internal decapitation. And so that was it. And those images, the video of it is still online. I remember watching the video of what happened. They don't show the actual moment of impact. The video aired on a news station at the time in Japan. Misawa's death was a big, big news story. They even had an inset image of the anchor watching the video as we're all watching the video, and he's practically in tears. So they show you as from the moment after the impact, and Misawa's just laying there, and they stop the match, which you could argue is what they should have done in this instance, but you know we'll talk about that more in a second. But yeah, I remember watching this Misawa footage, and it's so eerie. You have all the wrestlers, you know, just the images just haunt my brain of all of them in the ring, hands on their knees, huddled around Misawa's body. The doctors are in the ring working on him. You have Kenta, Hideo Itami, he was there. I'll never forget the look on his face as he just watched what was going on, like, you know, come on, Misawa, get up, get up. And he never did get up, and neither did Pero Aguayo. What was most distressing about the whole thing was just how long it took for everybody to realize that something was wrong and for medical help to be brought down to the ring. Conan was at ringside. He went over. He started to shake Aguayo, thinking maybe he was just knocked out. I see people criticizing Conan for shaking someone with a possible spinal injury. You know what? I'm sure they were good friends. I know they were good friends. I'm sure he was panicking and freaking the hell out. Just leave the guy alone. Same thing goes for Rey Mysterio. I swear, you know, there ought to be some kind of test that people are mandated to have to pass before they're allowed to operate a Twitter or a Facebook account. You have people saying, Rey Mysterio murdered Pero Aguayo. Rey Mysterio is a murderer. Rey Mysterio did not murder anybody. It was a freak accident. And I'm sure Rey is just gutted. He's just devastated by the whole thing. And the last thing this guy needs are a bunch of keyboard warriors tagging him in tweets, calling him a murderer. You know, that's something that he has to carry around now with him for the rest of his life. I feel for him. I feel for the guy. It wasn't his fault. We may never know what caused this to happen. Maybe he had a pre-existing injury. Maybe he had a pre-existing neck injury. And this was just the icing on the cake, a simple move. We just don't know. Now, as for where the doctor was, because they had a doctor at the show, where the hell was the doctor? They did have one at ringside. I guess earlier in the night, there was another match. Multiple people were injured, but there was one guy in particular who suffered a pretty bad spinal injury, I think. And so he was in the back. The doctor was in the back still tending to the other injured wrestler from the match earlier in the show. And there was no stretcher because the stretcher was being occupied by said wrestler in the back. That would explain if you watch the video, and I know a lot of you have, and some of you haven't, and you refuse to watch it, and I completely understand that. And I would actually advise people, if you haven't seen the video and now you're curious, don't watch the video. You know, I watched it because I wanted to know what happened because I knew I was going to talk about it. But, you know, if it's something you don't have to watch, I would suggest that you don't watch it because it is very morbid. But if you did watch the video, then you would know that they didn't carry him out from the ring on a stretcher. They carried him out almost on like a table. And the reason being, I guess, the one lone stretcher they had left was occupied in the back. But still, you know, you watch the video, and it's obvious fairly quickly that something is wrong with this guy. He's just dangling there on the ropes, hanging over the ropes, dead weight. They're still performing moves over his body. You know, Ray's doing a 619 over his body, and I think Tigre Uno did a dive outside the ring, you know, right next to him. It doesn't speak well. to how things were handled. And I don't blame the wrestlers in this case so much. I mean, there are other people who can just call the frickin' match off, like the referee, who was completely useless in this instance. It just doesn't speak well, I think, to how things were handled. And so an investigation has been launched into his death. It's possible they're saying that manslaughter charges may be filed. Hopefully not against Rey Mysterio, because that would be a travesty of justice. That would just be a miscarriage of justice if there was even the remote possibility of that happening. And I don't think that will happen. But it shouldn't even be discussed. I mean, that would just be completely idiotic if that even happened. But this is a very big deal down in Mexico. Aguayo was one of the biggest stars in all of Lucha Libre. He is a huge star down there. The top heel in the AAA promotion. Everything was built around this guy going forward. Everything was built around this guy. He was just in the main event of the Rey de Reyes show last week that I mentioned earlier. He was teaming with Pentagon Jr. in a loss to Rey Mysterio and Mysticis, the former Mystico and the original Sin Cara in WWE. Supposedly, they were preparing for a big feud later in the year with Perro Aguayo and Alberto El Patron. I mean, the guy was well-liked. He was well-respected. He was wrestling since he was a teenager. 15 years old is when he made his debut in the ring. I mean, he was born into the business of wrestling. And it's just a tragedy, an absolute tragedy what happened here. His father, Perro Aguayo, still alive, almost 70 years old, in very poor health, but he is still around. No parent should ever have to bury their child. You know, it's just an awful situation. And as if that isn't bad enough, there was another young wrestler death this week that I want to mention here. Cincinnati Red, his real name, Gregory Daves, longtime independent wrestler in the Southern California area. He died of a heart attack on Friday, age 40. Again, way too young. Had some memorable matches, from what I understand, on the independent scene out there with Terry Funk many years ago. He was also the man who broke Samoa Joe into the business. Joe was all broken up about it on Twitter. That's got to suck for Joe. You know, if he is on his way to WWE, and I think it's pretty much a given he's on his way to WWE very soon, you got to think he would have loved for his trainer, you know, the man who mentored him, to see him finally make it to the big stage. And sometimes life has other plans, unfortunately. Let's hope that this is all the death that I need to talk about on the show for a long, long time. All of the stuff is just very sad. Let's try to transition away from that and back to pro wrestling, or whatever the hell version of pro wrestling that was that we saw last Monday night, at least before the final 5 minutes of the show. I thought the ending of Raw Monday Night with Sting was great. The rest of the show, not so much. Raw this past Monday was live from Des Moines, Iowa. The DistractionRollup.com counter did not go up this week. That is a positive sign. I want to actually talk about the fan situation first. That was a big story earlier in the week. There were a group of fans who bought front row tickets on the hard camera side to Raw last Monday night. Apparently these guys go to a lot of shows in the area whenever Raw comes to town. And they dressed up as their favorite classic WWE superstars. They weren't dressed up as anybody from TNA or ECW, ROH, anything like that. It was classic characters like Hulk Hogan, the Macho Man, Jake the Snake Roberts, Paul Bearer, Sergeant Slaughter, Nikolai Volkoff, just all these guys just having a good time. Didn't seem to be bothering anybody. I didn't hear or read reports of any sort of disturbances or anything like that. And I saw some reports from some people saying, oh, these guys always go to the shows, and they've always, in the past, they've always been a disturbance, and they've always caused problems. Be that as it may, they weren't causing any problems on Monday night. They were sitting there, they were having a good time. I thought it was hilarious. Apparently, WWE did not feel the same way. I'm sure it was Kevin Dunn who took one look at that and said, now we gotta get these guys off camera. That's my Kevin Dunn impression. So they had everybody in the front row change out of their costumes, or they were going to be moved to a different part of the arena. They were threatened with being moved out of the front row seats that they paid for to a different part of the building off camera so that nobody can see them, because, God forbid, you should have any fun at Monday Night Raw. And I understand it is their television show and they can do whatever the hell they want, but that doesn't make it any less petty. Now, if they were causing a disturbance, if they were causing problems of some kind, then you take action. But they weren't causing any problems. I didn't see any problems. The people who were there in that section said they weren't causing any issues up to that point in the show. It was very early on that they forced them to move. The whole thing was just ridiculous. That whole front row was my childhood. My childhood was in that front row. I got a kick out of it. I thought it was great. WWE spokesperson said that the company has apologized to the fans for what happened. They offered them free tickets to an upcoming event, which, according to one of the fans on Reddit who was part of that group, they have declined the offer. WWE's issues were that the outfits were too distracting, which is a load of horse shit. Yeah, they were distracting for all of 5 minutes. You want to know what it distracted me from? It distracted me, because it was at the very beginning of the show, it distracted me from the ungodly, boring 15-minute-long diatribe at the beginning of the show with Seth Rollins and The Big Show and Kane and J&J, and then finally Randy Orton comes out. A 15-minute talking segment that could have easily been condensed to 5. The other big controversy, and this to me was just completely ridiculous, whether it's true or not, what ended up happening was completely ridiculous. So, there were a few reports online. I don't know what forum they started at. I think the first mention of it I saw was in a thread on Reddit, but apparently there were different accounts from a few different people who were at the building who claimed that as they came in, security took away their Daniel Bryan signs. Now, there were plenty of Daniel Bryan signs in the crowd, including one right on camera that, ironically, they did not take away from somebody that said Daniel Bryan is a turd, or it was something that mentioned turd. And we all know about that from last week's podcast. I don't need to get into that whole thing again. Thankfully, that chant is not yet stuck, and we don't have people chanting turd at Daniel Bryan, at least not yet. But these people claim that, you know, some of the security guards were like, well, we already have enough Daniel Bryan signs. They were collecting them, and they were not allowing people to take them into the building. And there was a lot of back and forth. Oh, this didn't happen. There were people who were at the show who said that did not happen. There were people who insisted that it did. I made a tweet about it, and before long, I start getting tweets from you guys saying, oh, hey, Solomonster, congratulations, you're the number one post on Reddit. I have no idea what these people are talking about. And it turns out that somebody took that one tweet that I posted and posted it on Reddit, and it just blew up into this huge thread, the number one thread in the wrestling section on Reddit. Last I checked, it had over 600 comments. I stopped looking at it after a while. It was just completely ridiculous to me how that blew up. From one tweet, it was just a comment. It was not reporting anything. I am not a reporter. That is not what I tweet about. I tweet comments. I tweet what I think. And when there is some kind of big story that breaks, yes, I will tweet links to it. That's not what this was. But yet, somehow, this warranted 600-plus comments on Reddit as though it was the gospel. So, lesson learned there. Need to be careful what I post on Twitter, apparently. But, in my defense, since then, the story has been corroborated by Dave Meltzer in The Observer, who claims to have heard from two different fans himself who were at the show. And so WWE claims, oh, we were not aware of this happening, which, you know, what else would you expect them to say? Did it actually happen or not? We'll never know, but it's been corroborated at least by one source since then who heard from two people who were at the building. Just the whole thing blew up. It was just stupid. And if it is happening, by the way, then that's one of the more ridiculous things I've ever heard. And for what it's worth, I don't know if this is a common practice for them or not. Maybe this story was complete horseshit, but I can tell you from personal experience that back when I attended the Royal Rumble in 2008 at Madison Square Garden, that was the one where John Cena made his big surprise return at number 30. As we entered the building by the security checkpoint, they were taking certain signs away from people and putting them in a pile. I saw it with my own two eyes. I don't know if those signs all had profanity on them. I can't imagine they all did. Some of them did, maybe, but not all of them. But I vividly remember looking over and seeing a pile of signs that was starting to stack up very high that they were taking away from people before they even had their ticket scanned to get into the building. So there is a precedent for this sort of thing. It is not complete horseshit to think that, well, they would never do something like that. No, they have, and I'm sure they probably still do. I saw it with my own two eyes. So not a good night to be a fan, I guess, if you are in the building in Iowa on Monday night. There were two takeaways from this show for me. One was the Sting angle in the end, which I thought was great. The other takeaway was that this show made me less interested in most of the key matches of WrestleMania. And by that measure, this show is a failure. You know, we're 2 weeks away from WrestleMania. These shows should be getting me more excited for the show, not less. Did they do that for the women's match? Nope. Tag team title match? Nope. The Battle Royal? Not only did they not get me more interested in that match, they succeeded in making me not want to see the match at all. Undertaker and Bray Wyatt? Nope. Cena and Rusev? Absolutely not. Not after that sorry excuse for a contract signing. Orton and Rollins? Nope. The show-long storyline they did on this show was stupid. I mean, save for the beatdown on Rollins a few weeks ago, which was pretty cool when Orton kicked his ass all over the arena, which actually negated the reason for me even wanting to see the match at Mania in the first place. Aside from that beatdown, everything they've done with this storyline since Orton came back has been stupid. And I'll get into why in a second. The Sting stuff that it led to at the end of the show was great, but you could have done any angle that actually made sense to get to that point. The Sting segment does not get them off the hook for wasting our time getting to that point. Sting and Triple H? Yeah, I actually am more excited now for their match. So there's one success. Lesnar and Reigns? I won't say I'm less interested, but I can't say I'm any more interested than I was going into the show. But they didn't make me less interested, so I'll consider that a victory. They're finally doing the face-off between the two of them in the ring on Monday night. So that'll be their opportunity to get me really excited for the main event. So this show succeeded in getting me amped up for exactly one match at WrestleMania. That is the sign of a bad television show. We got an 11-minute Divas title match between Nikki Bella and AJ Lee. By far the longest Divas match I've ever clocked on this show since I started this whole gimmick. And it wasn't that bad either. It wasn't great. I don't think it did much to convince people that the women should get 11 minutes every single week, but they tried their best. Paige and Brie Bella were out there. They got into it. That distracted AJ and caused her to be rack-attacked and pinned. We had the John Cena-Rusev contract signing for a United States Championship match at WrestleMania. No Lana on the show. They already took her off TV. She's off making a movie with Edge, some WWE movie. I'm hoping they fly her in at least for WrestleMania. She deserves to be there. She's a very important part of the act. It's their first WrestleMania. If she's not there, I think that match is going to be missing something. So I'm hoping they'll fly her in at least for that show. But she may not be there. She wasn't on TV Monday night, and already people were chanting, "We want Lana." It's not hard to see why, given how this whole segment unfolded. Rusev brought out a lawyer. This was supposed to be Rusev's, I guess, American... No, not American. He was supposed to be Russian. He was supposed to be Rusev's Russian lawyer. And from what I understand, they found some local actor who's some kind of theater community actor. You could tell. It's very apparent from his performance here in this segment. All he had to do was go out there and fake a Russian accent and say a few lines. That's all he had to do. I can fake a Russian accent. I could go out there and be the lawyer for Rusev. I don't even know if that's Russian. You know what, though? That sounds more Russian, whatever the fuck this guy was doing on Monday night. This guy was awful. He was so bad. He was so atrocious to the point that Vince McMahon was in JBL's ear telling him to bury this guy on commentary, which is why JBL started making those comments about the lawyer guy, and he even mentioned it sounds like he's from Texas. He doesn't sound like a lawyer, and he just was burying this guy. Which made me think, you know, when JBL started doing that, it made me think the punchline to this whole thing was that we would find out at the end of the segment that this guy, or maybe like backstage after it was over, they'd be scheming and laughing in the back, and we'd find out that this guy really wasn't a lawyer at all. It was just some guy that Rusev hired and brought in. But that punchline never came, because the whole point, this was supposed to be taken seriously. This was not supposed to be meant for comedy. But once the guy opened his mouth and started talking, it was high comedy. He was supposed to be Rusev's Russian lawyer. He would have had a better job putting Swiss Salamaster out there and being more convincing than this guy. This guy was about as Russian as Big Show is vegan. So Rusev would not sign the contract unless John Cena promised to let him read a prepared statement without the threat of violence. Even though we were told last week Lana's acceptance of the match made the match official. The announcer said it's official. They put the graphic up for it. Apparently, it was never official. Rusev could just turn down the match anyway. So Rusev insulted America a little bit in his promo. Cena just stood there making angry faces at him. Well, here's what I want to know. Since the match was supposed to be official last week, and Rusev can just come out here and apparently just disregard that and break the rules completely, why couldn't John Cena just punch him in the mouth? I mean, John Cena said, okay, I'll let you read your prepared statement and I won't beat you up. Just beat the shit out of the guy. Since nobody cares about the rules anyway, who gives a shit? So he stood there, he made angry faces for a while, and then Rusev overturned the table, and he tucked tail, and he ran away. And I thought it was funny when the Russian lawyer guy tried to get out of the ring, he hit his head on the bottom rope, which actually, I guess in light of things that happened this weekend, maybe isn't so funny. But anyway, the point is, this guy didn't know what the hell he was doing. Even exiting the ring, he was clumsy as all hell. He had no business being out there. This entire segment was a gigantic waste of time. This was not entertaining. Like, even if this segment, looking back on it in the grand scheme of things, since we already knew the match was happening anyway, if it turned out to be a waste of time, if it was entertaining, like if the guy was meant to be funny and he was out there and people were laughing, if there was something entertaining about this segment, I could almost disregard it and be like, okay, that was fun. This was not fun. This was stupid, this was an embarrassment, and this was a gigantic waste of time. And like I said earlier, it made me less interested in seeing these guys wrestle at WrestleMania, which should not be the objective of these segments. Kid Sorrow beat the Blue Day when Cesaro pinned Kofi Kingston. The Matadors were out there. El Torito delivered a Hurricanrana to Cesaro that sent him out to the floor. So he had to sell for the Bull. No Usos, because Jay apparently has a shoulder injury, and he was having an MRI done. I don't know how serious it is. The Usos may be out of WrestleMania. I'm not sure yet. Their status is up in the air. The tag team title match will be on the pre-show, as it was, I believe, last year for WrestleMania. And with this kind of booking, that's exactly where it belongs. We had a Brock Lesnar video package, which is always fun. In this one, they bleeped him saying that he was going to fuck up Roman Reigns, or at least that's what we're supposed to believe he said. Paul Heyman came out later in the show to do his own in-ring promo again, and Heyman's always great. He was interrupted this time by Roman Reigns, who now wears a shirt that reads, "I can, I will." Someone should create a shirt for people to wear at WrestleMania that says, "Boo Roman Reigns, I can, I will." Because you know it's going to happen. Apparently this guy thinks he's Stuart Smalley. Daily affirmations with Roman Reigns. That could be a new segment on Raw each week. This was actually one of the best, if not the best Roman Reigns promo, at least in-ring promo, that he has done maybe ever. And probably the best Roman Reigns promo since that studio show they did the night after the Royal Rumble. I thought he did just fine. He spoke directly into the hard camera at Brock Lesnar. Said he knows it's going to be a war at WrestleMania. He may have to be carried out. That's okay. People say, "I can't." He says, "I can and I will." That's the new tagline. People in the crowd started to chant Daniel Bryan, and he just talked right over them, which really is the best way to handle those kind of chants. Just don't give him a chance to fester. Just speed right over him and hope they stop. That's the way to really handle those things. Not bitching to Rolling Stone that people need to shut the hell up when I'm out there cutting promos and let me talk. You know, unless the guy's turning heel, that's not the best way to endear oneself to the audience. He has to get rid of those blue contact lenses, though. It's just way too distracting. I mean, I've noticed it for a few weeks. It really stuck out to me this week. He just doesn't look human, you know? I guess in a way you could say it kind of looks cool, but to me it's just very distracting. This is what I was worried about. You know what I mean? Like, they're giving the guys, like, blazing blue contacts, I guess because in their mind they think that's what a baby face has. A baby face has, you know, blue eyes. And, like, just let the guy be himself. Don't turn him into a Cena drone. That's just the absolute worst thing they could possibly do to this guy. If there's anything fake, if there's anything phony about the guy, even his eye color, people are going to, they're going to pick up on that. They're going to notice that. They're going to resent him for it. Just let him go out there and be himself and beat the hell out of people. That's all you have to do. That's all they should let him do on Monday night. I mean, maybe they have Brock give him an F5, lay him out. You know, I would almost save that spot maybe for Mania, but you got to do something to get some more heat on this match. There's got to be some kind of a shoving match or a pull-apart brawl, or he's got to do something cool like he did a few weeks ago when he did that big dive into the pile of guys outside the ring. And even that one time he delivered the spear to Big Show, remember that? Big Show was in the aisleway and Roman came out from the back and just launched himself through the air with like some super spear. It's a great visual. Like, we need to see more of that. spearing guys through the barricade like he did with Mark Henry a few weeks ago. We've seen him do that so many times. He was doing it when he was in the Shield. That, to me, that's not an impressive spot anymore because it's been done to death. They got to come up with creative stuff for this guy to do that's going to make the crowd go, holy shit, like when he speared Seth Rollins in half in that midair spear a few weeks ago. He caught him in midair. That was cool. You know, we need to see more of that from this guy. But the contact lenses, just they have to go. We got a preview of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania with a bunch of undercard guys who have no chance of winning in the ring doing a Battle Royal. Plus Mark Henry and Kane, two non-undercard guys who have no chance of winning. They had a face-off near the end. Nobody cared. Thank God for that NXT announcement they made during the week. I'll get to that during the NXT segment, but it affects the Battle Royal. They announced a six-person interspecies tag team match for SmackDown this week, pitting the tag team champions and Natalya against the Matadors and the Bull. Judging by the booking on the show, there must be some interspecies breeding going on amongst the members of the creative team. That's all I can deduce from this. Daniel Bryan, Dean Ambrose, and Dolph Ziggler beat Luke Harper, Stardust, and Bad News Barrett after Ambrose pinned the champion because champs are chumps. But you already knew that. And apparently Booker T knew it too, because Booker T had the line of the night on the show when he said, "When is the last time Bad News Barrett even got a win?" See, even Booker knows. I did see the Intercontinental Gauntlet on SmackDown. They had all the guys that are in the ladder match of WrestleMania do a gauntlet. And it came down to Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler, which at one time was rumored to be a singles match of WrestleMania. I thought overall the gauntlet was very good. I thought the Ziggler-Bryan match was also very good. Nothing blowaway, but I enjoyed it. And then I promptly turned the show off because on SmackDown there really is nothing else worth watching. They announced that on the go-home show to WrestleMania, which is Raw this Monday night, we have two more celebrity guests to look forward to, Snoop Dogg and Bill Simmons. The best thing I can say about this is that at least both of them are wrestling fans, especially Simmons. I know Simmons has been a big wrestling fan for a long time. He'll be sitting in on commentary for a match or two. Can't be any worse than the commentary we get every single week. And then came the main event angle, the big Authority swerve. So throughout the entire show, we had members of the Authority deserting Seth Rollins, because you see, at the beginning of the show, they announced the match between Randy Orton and Seth Rollins. And Randy Orton, and this is why this whole thing made no sense and was a waste of 3 hours. So the opening segment of the show ends with Randy Orton coming out, dueling promos with Seth Rollins, and Orton acknowledges the fact, look, I know that I'm going to be outnumbered here. I know you got your boys, you got J&J, you got Kane in the Big Show, Triple H is in your back pocket. I know what I'm up against here, and that's fine. I accept it, and I'm cool with it. I'm still going to kick your ass. That's basically what happened. What followed for the remaining 3 hours is they did this long, drawn-out swerve that everybody can see coming from a mile away. Stevie Wonder can see this coming. Where the Big Show said, "I'm not going to be out there with you." Kane said, "I'm not going to be out there with you." Because Rollins is very smug and he would make comments that rub them the wrong way. J&J, Jamie Noble quit. Joey Mercury is a mute. That's his gimmick, so he doesn't talk, but he just walked away. And so Seth Rollins is all worried, like, oh, holy shit, I'm by myself. I got to face Randy Orton all alone. And sure enough, he comes out pretending to be all scared. And it was a swerve. The Authority came out with him. And all I could think as I'm watching this is, based on what Randy Orton himself said at the beginning of the show, who cares? Like, Randy Orton basically said, I understand I'm going to be outnumbered, and I'm okay with that. I don't care. So, as it turns out, he was outnumbered, and Randy Orton didn't seem to care. The fans didn't seem to care. Why should we? What was the point of doing this swerve over the course of 3 hours, other than we have to fill TV time somehow? Almost every single thing they've done in this feud so far, since Orton came back. I mean, he came back a house of fire at Fastlane. He was kicking ass. It was great. And then as soon as they started this cutesy bullshit where I'm going to be friends with Seth Rollins and the Authority, and nobody will see it coming. Not even Seth Rollins, the dumbest man on the face of planet Earth. And they do, and they killed it after 2 weeks. Even the blow-off to that was stupid as far as how they did it. I mean, the actual beatdown was cool. But just having Orton kind of out there and be like, "No, I'm going to kick your ass," like, that's the best they could come up with. So I feel like, you know, this whole thing has just been weakened. This is not the way this should have gone down. You know, Orton was put out for months. He was bloodied. He was curb stomped by this guy. He should come back and just be wanting to kill this man week after week, with Rollins trying to find ways to escape being murdered on television by this man, this psychopath. And they didn't do that. And nor did they do my idea, which I still maintain would have been much better, which is, if you want to add some heat to this match and you want to make it a really personal issue, what's the one thing that is most personal and valuable to Seth Rollins? What is his most prized possession? It's the Money in the Bank briefcase. He's been carrying that thing around through all the airports and everything now for like 9 months, 10 months. And the worst thing you could possibly do to this guy is somehow cost him his briefcase, is somehow cost him his shot to become WWE champion. And with the limited dates that Brock Lesnar has, you know, he was on the show the week before, or it was the week before that. He was on the show again this week. Actually, no, he wasn't on the show this week. It was like the March 9th show, whatever it was. You could have done an angle on that show where, you know, Rollins comes out. Something happens to set up Brock being vulnerable. Rollins comes out. Nobody's expecting it. He's going to cash in. The bell rings, which means it's official, because it's not official until the bell rings. And that's when Randy Orton strikes. That's when the Viper strikes. And whatever he does, he costs Seth Rollins the match, and he ruins his chances of being the champion. He completely negates the purpose of Rollins traveling all over the place with this briefcase now for months. Rollins is just beside himself. He's upset. He's angry. Orton still wants to kill him. I mean, there's so many things you could have done with this thing. So this storyline was like a show-contained storyline. This was something that kind of built over the course of the 3 hours, and I just think it was a complete waste. But it did lead to something really cool, which, again, is not excusing the bad storytelling here, but it did lead to something cool, which was the lights go out, the lights come back on, and it's Sting. Sting is in the ring. The people are going nuts. He's got the baseball bat. I still love that picture. it was great. There were people who, on some of the meme websites, they did one where it showed Sting standing there with the bat when the lights came back on, and Orton's kind of looking at him all weird. Everybody's looking at Sting, and they've got the text on there that says, you know, "I'm here to take down the Beatdown Clan." And then, you know, in the next frame, it's like, wait a minute, this isn't TNA. You could actually even substitute the Aces and Eights. Put Aces and Eights in there. "I'm here to take down Aces and Eights." Oh, wait a minute. And anyway, later on, so the big brawl erupts, and Orton ended up RKOing somebody. There was another meme where it had a picture of Sting shaking Orton's hand that just said, "Why do you use the diamond cutter?" Because, you know, this guy's been in hiding for 14 years. This poor guy, I mean, he's like those Japanese soldiers back in the day when World War II ended, and they didn't know the war was over. And they were out there in the woods for like 20, 30 years, still thinking, you know, death to America. And somebody had to pull these guys aside and say, no, the war's over. The war's been over for years. That's kind of like, Sting is that Japanese soldier, if Japanese soldiers walked around with face paint on themselves. So Sting's kicking ass, Orton's kicking ass. They had Sting do the Stinger Splash in the corner. He dropped one of the, I think it was Noble with the Scorpion Death Drop. It was the very first time that we've ever seen Sting inside an actual Raw ring. We've seen him on Raw once or twice before, but never in the ring. So this was kind of a big deal after all these years. This is the very first time, and Sting looked great, you know? He didn't get as high as he did in the past for the Scorpion, or for the Stinger Splash. But he's also 56 years old with bad knees, so I'll cut him some slack there. But he looked good. And they did a kind of like a hard sell for the network. They wanted you to subscribe to the network if you're not already subscribed, which I'm thinking most people who are going to be subscribed to the network already are, most likely. But it was smart. You know, it was a smart thing. If you wanted to hear Sting speak for the first time in his own words, you know, not some distorted voice in a video package, you'd have to subscribe to the network and watch it. And it was Michael Cole in the ring with Orton and Sting. Orton said some words. He said, "Listen, Sting, I know you're new here, but I don't need other people's help. That being said, that was pretty damn cool." And they shook hands. And then Michael Cole gave Sting the mic. Sting cut a very brief promo, but he was full of fire and passion. He was intense. I don't understand the people, and very few. There weren't a lot, but there were a few people who tweeted me, and they thought I was being sarcastic when I made a comment about Sting's great promo. I wasn't being sarcastic at all. I don't see what there is to be sarcastic about. I think Sting is a very good promo guy. I mean, maybe, you know, 15 years ago in WCW, he wasn't anything to sing home about. But in TNA, he opened a lot of eyes with his promos. He's very articulate, very well-spoken. And I think with Sting, he's just got this intensity in his promos that a lot of guys don't have. You know, and now in this one, he was practically shouting because he wanted Triple H in the worst way. He just wants to beat the hell out of Triple H. But I thought Sting was great. I thought it was brief. It was to the point, which is how promo should be. But I thought Sting was, he looked good. He sounded great. It was good to see him. It's exactly what I talked about in my PW Mania column the week before. You got to get this guy on the show and get a microphone in his hand. You only have a few weeks left. I know you don't want to ruin the specialness about him. I'm not saying put him out there every single week, week after week after week, doing promos. But this was the first time that he's ever done this. He's got to be back in the ring again this Monday doing a promo. You've got to do the segment that you should have done at Fastlane. You got to do it this Monday night. You got to have him and Triple H in the ring, whether it's a contract signing or just a face-to-face, whatever it is. And maybe not a face-to-face because they're already doing that with Lesnar and Reigns. But then again, they already did a contract signing with Cena and Rusev, and after that, I have no interest in seeing another contract signing for the rest of my life. But you got to get these two guys in the ring together and let Sting speak. Let him react to this commentary that we've been hearing from Triple H about 14 years you've been in hiding, and I was the reason that WCW died, and da-da-da-da-da. It's about time we heard from Sting. At length, let Sting in his own words speak. 6 days, it's going to be 6 days before WrestleMania. I hope they do that. And I was happy that they did that on Monday night. It didn't bother me that it was on the network. Who cares? We all have network subscriptions anyway, so who gives a shit? It was a nice little hook. You know, maybe they got a few new subscriptions out of it. Probably not many, but maybe they did. And I thought the show ended on a high note. The show itself was not that good at all, but I thought it ended on a very high note. We have two new names announced for the WWE Hall of Fame. One was announced on Raw Monday night. Larry Zbysko, the living legend. Larry Land, going into the Hall of Fame. Had a really nice video package, I think, for the people who are not familiar with his work. His big claim to fame was the big feud. First friendship, mentorship, which then turned into a feud when he turned on Bruno Sammartino. This was back in the 70s. They had their big match, in, I think in 80, at Shea Stadium in New York. It was the big blow-off, I think, between the two of them. He didn't really ever have that kind of success ever again. He was champion in the AWA, but it was in the dying days, and you know he was married to Vern Gagne's daughter, and so there was that. I guess maybe he has that in common with Triple H, right? He married Vern Gagne's daughter, became the world champion. Unfortunately, though, AWA went under, and Larry, maybe to a lot of people, is probably more well-known for being the announcer on WCW Monday Nitro. And he would be the one out there every week when the NWO would come out, and he would call them the New World Odor. That was his insult for the NWO. And he had a match with Eric Bischoff at Starrcade in 97. I think he had a pay-per-view match with Scott Hall as well. I know the two of them were very good friends. So I have no problem with Larry Zbysko going into the Hall of Fame compared to other Hall of Fames, more legit Hall of Fames that have maybe a more stringent policy on who they let in. I don't think Larry would get in to a Hall of Fame if the criteria were, you know, his drawing power over a certain period of time and stuff like that. But you can't, you know, you really just can't think of things like that with the WWE Hall of Fame because that's not what it's about. It's about what name can we get? Do we have footage of them? And if we do, then eventually you're going to get in, regardless of your overall credentials. I mean, there are guys who deserve to be in who maybe they would put in, but they don't have access to their footage. And I wonder if that's why Ray Stevens is not getting in this year. There were a lot of rumors that Ray Stevens was going to go in. Pat Patterson was tag team partners with him back in the day in the Bay Area. You know, WrestleMania is in the Bay Area this year. Ray Stevens was a big name, and maybe Pat Patterson is pushing for it. From what I have read, his name was on the docket at one point, and then it wasn't. So he's not going in, but probably the whether or not they have footage of you to include in a Hall of Fame induction, that probably has as much to do with it as anything. So Larry going in is cool, and on SmackDown they announced that Tatsumi Fujinami would be going into the Hall of Fame. He is one of the founding fathers of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and he will be inducted next weekend into the Hall of Fame as well. He'll be inducted by Ric Flair. The two of them had some memorable battles with one another, including a match in Japan where Flair was the NWA champion and Fujinami was the IWGP champion. They drew a huge crowd at the Tokyo Dome, and Fujinami pinned Ric Flair in that match. But there was something that happened prior to the pinfall. There was a WCW referee there. I guess the WCW referee noticed that something happened that was a cause for a disqualification, but the DQ was never called. Now, that wasn't announced until a few days after the show. So, in the building in the Tokyo Dome that night, you would think, Fujinami is the IWGP and the NWA Heavyweight Champion. And they did give him the big celebration as though he had won. But it was a few days later, you know, back in the States, and I don't even know if it was ever actually acknowledged, but I think the line was that it was actually a DQ. There was no title change. Flair never lost the belt, you know, technically speaking. So it was one of those dusty finish deals where they do the title change, but you come to find out afterward that there really was no title change. It was kind of like the Ric Flair-Jack Veneno deal down in the Dominican Republic, which I discussed with George Napolitano. If you don't know who that is, then shame on you. Look it up. I interviewed him on Sound Off 182. George is one of the all-time great pro wrestling writers and photographers. He's really known more for his photography. He's had a few photo books that have even come out. He was promoting one when I had him on the show. I'd become very friendly with him in recent years. I see him even just in my own personal line of work. He'll take photos for more than just wrestling shows. I mean, he's there for other sporting events and celebrity events. And he's a really good guy, had a huge influence on a lot of careers, including a lot of big names you would never think, like The Rock and Triple H and guys like that. You really should go back in the archives, check out Sound Off 182. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but you'll learn a thing or two if you listen to the interview. But, you know, George was there. George was a very good friend, still is, with Ric Flair, and he was there in the Dominican Republic with Rick when he was down there for that title match. Jack Veneno was like a local hero, and he was going to be wrestling for the NWA Championship. The whole thing is a really fascinating story and very similar to this. But anyway, Fujinami's reign is never acknowledged as NWA Champion. Maybe in Japan it is, but not here. So he and Flair had a rematch at Super Brawl 1991, where Flair pinned him. You can watch that on the network. He did wrestle off and on in the WWWF, and you know, then WWF. He had some matches. He held their junior heavyweight title a couple of times. I've answered a mailbag question on the show before about the lineage of that title. I have no idea what episode number, so please don't ask me, but it was sometime last year. Guy is 61 years old, still wrestles from time to time. I'm sure that makes Ric Flair very jealous. So he will be going into the Hall of Fame. And if you don't want to know the final inductee that will be announced this week, most likely on Raw this Monday, mute the audio for the next 30 seconds if you don't want to know. WWE will announce that Kevin Nash will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, but not as Kevin Nash. He will be going in, it is now confirmed, as Big Daddy Cool Diesel. He will be inducted by Shawn Michaels. He will also be the headline attraction at the Hall of Fame, which I know is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. He will be the one that goes on last, and the reason for that is very simple. Randy Savage is dead, and they don't want the show to go off the air on a depressing note, nor do they want it to go off the air with Lanny Poffo at the podium. They've got Shawn Michaels there to induct Kevin Nash to them, to Kevin Dunn and all of them. That's a bigger attraction. And so Nash, as Diesel, will be the headliner, technically the headliner. You and I both know who the real headliner is this year. You know, this kind of shit doesn't bother me, but I know there are going to be a lot of people very upset about that, and I get that. Savage is going in. That's the most important thing. It's several years too late. I wish he was around. I just would love to see a Randy Savage Hall of Fame speech. And, you know, unfortunately, because they decided to, you know, play around with their cocks for far too long, we've now been deprived of that moment, unfortunately, and his family has been deprived of that moment, but at least we're getting it, and they could put Nash in, Nash could curtain jerk, and they could put him on last, they could not put him on, I don't care what they do, that doesn't bother me so much, but that is the logic that goes into why it's happening that way. Him going in as Diesel makes sense in that Scott Hall went in as Razor Ramon, and so it makes sense that Nash would go in then as Diesel, and so that way if they start inducting factions, when they put the NWO in, they can go in under their real names. Now, personally, I think it's completely ridiculous to put characters in the Hall of Fame and put the person in multiple times, 2-3 times. I think that's just idiotic. But again, it's the WWE Hall of Fame. It's unlike any other Hall of Fame out there, and that's just how they do things. You know, Mick Foley is already in the Hall of Fame, but I guess I'm sure at some point when they start to run out of names, they'll trot him out there as Mankind, and then they'll trot him out there again as Cactus Jack. He'll be the first person to ever three-peat as a WWE Hall of Famer. Diesel, as far as his run in WWE, Diesel was a flop as champion in 1995, but he did hold the title for over a year. Not too many people can say that. He was the first guy that I can remember in any of the major promotions who started doing the cool heel shtick, you know, before it became popular during the Monday Night Wars. It was after he turned at Survivor Series when he lost the title in 95, powerbombed the shit out of Bret Hart, showed up the next night, cut a promo, basically telling the fans, listen, if I look out in the crowd and you got a black glove, you know, I'll tap hands with you. If you don't got a black glove, get out of my way. And it was very unique in that, at least in WWE, we had never seen somebody do that before. We had never seen somebody portray that kind of character before. I still remember him flipping the bird to The Undertaker at the Royal Rumble a few months later, which is something you would never see back then in WWE. You barely see it now. Randy Orton did it, and the camera cut away. So he gave his notice to Vince, I think, in February of 96. It was very shortly thereafter. So he didn't really have too much time to flesh out the character, to really see months down the road where it would have gone. It probably would have turned him back babyface is what would have ended up happening. He ended up in WCW where being the cool heel became the thing to do and probably ended up doing more harm than good in the long run. Not the strongest Hall of Fame class they've ever had. I think that goes without saying. Except maybe for the presenters. You know, think about it. You got Hulk Hogan inducting Randy Savage, Bruno Sammartino inducting Larry Zbysko, Ric Flair inducting Fujinami, and Shawn Michaels inducting Kevin Nash, or Diesel, whatever. I mean, except for Randy Savage, who was a big enough star on his own, I would say the inductors may get a bigger reaction than the inductees this year, the way things are shaping up. WWE announced this week that there will be an NXT tournament this Thursday at WrestleMania Access involving four men, Finn Balor, Adrian Neville, Tyler Breeze, and Hideo Itami, with the winner earning a spot in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And I see everybody getting all excited, and it does add something to the Battle Royal, which was on life support after what they did on Monday night. But I would caution people to just temper those expectations a little bit. You know, need I remind you all of the last time there was an NXT tournament to decide a spot in a big battle royal on the main roster? It was Bo Dallas 2 years ago in the Royal Rumble match. And how'd that turn out? He got to eliminate Wade Barrett in the Royal Rumble, who was the Intercontinental Champion at the time, who he then pinned in a non-title match on Raw the next night. Okay? It's nice to see that some things never change. That was 2 years ago. You may as well take that script and apply it to today, because not much has changed. And then a few weeks later, the feud was dropped and he disappeared. So I'm excited to see the NXT guys involved, but I'm also realistic about what I should probably expect out of this. That being said, my money is on Adrian Neville. He's the one I think is going to win. But I would say don't discount the possibility of Finn Balor winning the whole thing. I don't see Breeze or Itami. It's got to be Neville or Balor, I think. I think it's Neville, but let's not, again, disregard Balor here. I've been saying for a while now that I think we're going to see an NXT guy debut the night after WrestleMania, and that guy would be Finn Balor. They've already thrust him into an NXT title match coming up this Wednesday night with Kevin Owens. I think they're doing that because they have plans to move him up to the main roster ASAP. This could be the time, but here's the thing about the Battle Royal, okay? If he's not in the Battle Royal to win the whole thing, he should not be in the Battle Royal. He should not be in there at all. A guy like him needs to make a big splash on day one. That's either a proper build-up with a big entrance, or you throw him in the Battle Royal and he wins the whole damn thing. He can't debut as a loser. I've got no problem with Breeze if they wanted to heal him there. You know, he's more than ready. I think it's too soon for Itami. It's Neville or Balor, but that's the key. Especially if it's Balor, because Balor's the money guy, I think, going forward. Maybe even a year from now. It could be that early that this guy's going to be money for them on the main roster. Whatever they do with him, he should not debut as a loser on day one. I just think that would be a big mistake. But as far as Neville goes, you know, I think it's Neville in part because they've got nothing going on for him right now. He's just kind of floating around. Doesn't even mean, by the way, if it is Neville, that he's coming up to the main roster for good. You know, right now, this is for the right to win a trophy. There's a trophy on the line here, not a contract. So just keep that in mind as well. I still think, though, Neville wins this tournament, and they debut Balor the night after WrestleMania. I'm gonna stick to that as my prediction. NXT this week was on location at the Arnold Classic in Columbus, Ohio. So they were out of their normal setting at Full Sail University. And I love Full Sail, but I think it's really cool when they take the show on the road. They don't do that, for example, with Raw. I mean, Raw's on the road every week. But there's something to be said, I think, for freshening up the look of the show. I've been begging for it for years. And there were people who would disagree with me saying, oh, Raw doesn't look anything like it used to look 10, 15 years ago, Solomonster. You're exaggerating. If you want to be technical about it, okay, if you really want to be technical, then yes. Obviously, the show looks a little bit different than it did 10, 15, 20 years ago. But when I say that, look at Monday Night Raw. The basic setup, the big Titantron, the ramp, the stage, and just look at it, and you tell me, does it really look radically different than it did in 1998 or 2003 or 2007 before they went HD? It doesn't. It's the same basic look. And here's the funny thing about it. I was watching a little bit of WCW Monday Nitro on the network the other day, and I must have just picked a really... It was whatever was on the live feed. It was the episode of Nitro where the NWO took over. And it was a disaster. I mean, the show was almost unwatchable. It was so unbelievably boring. But the one thing I liked about Nitro back in the day, I loved the spring break shows when they would go on location there. But it was a situation where when I would look at the arena, I don't know if it was just the kind of buildings they were running or just how they had it set up. For whatever reason, even if it was a building that only fit 5,000 people in there, maybe it was the camera angles, I don't know. It looked wider and bigger. It looked more spacious. I mean, the building was packed, but it looked, I don't even know how to describe it. It just looked more spacious. And I know there are a lot of newer arenas now. That was 1997. It's 2015. There are a ton of new arenas out there. But I don't know why that would be. Maybe I'm the only one who feels that way. It's kind of a weird way for me to describe it. I like that look for Nitro, though. I almost wish that Raw could have a similar kind of look. I'm just begging for something fresh. And they gave us that this week with NXT on the road. And you could argue whether Full Sail is nicer, it's better. I just like that it was different, you know. And the crowd, I will say this, the crowd didn't seem as loud. At moments, and for certain people, they were. But the crowd overall, I thought, was actually a little disappointing. They seemed a little quieter than I thought they would be. But it was just a very unique venue. It was a very unique setup. You know, you look at the kind of the ringside area, and it doesn't look like there's a lot of people there, but they did kind of pan out a few times, and they had a few thousand people. I mean, they had a really healthy crowd there. And I just thought it was cool. I like that. Change can be different. Change can just make things fresher. That's not as much of an issue for NXT as it is for a show like Raw or SmackDown, but I appreciate that. I like the stage setup and everything else and how it was. It's going to be right back to normal this week because the show that airs this Wednesday was taped. I think it was taped even before they went to Columbus. You know, this match with Owens and Balor that's coming up this Wednesday night's been in the can for probably over a month now. But anyway, they open with Tyler Breeze against Kalisto. Good match, short match, nothing overly special. Tyler wins with the beauty shot, so at least they're keeping him strong by giving him wins. We had some footage of Triple H being inducted into the International Sports Hall of Fame. Looked a little weird seeing Triple H on stage with, you know, quote, real athletes. And Evander Holyfield was there. And I was just left wondering to myself, why is Triple H being inducted into this Sports Hall of Fame? And I couldn't come up with a good answer other than Arnold Schwarzenegger is going into the WWE Hall of Fame and Triple H went into his Hall of Fame. So it's, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Wesley Blake, one half of the tag team champions, pinned Colin Cassidy with a distraction roll-up. You can imagine how thrilled I was to see that. There is a time and a place to do that finish, but I just think I've been so traumatized by how many times they use that show on the main roster that anytime I see that now on a WWE show, I immediately get just douche chills up and down my spine. Kaz and Enzo were just mega over in front of this crowd. They did the pre-match shtick where, you know, we could all probably recite it word for word by now. I'm not going to do it here. These guys are going to be a big hit on the main roster before they inevitably bump them down to main event and superstar status each week. But it'll be fun while it lasts. They also booed Carmella. Carmella was out there with them, and she got roundly booed. She is naturally hateable. I don't know what it is. She's a beautiful girl. She seems athletic. I think she used to be a dancer for some sports team before she came to WWE. And, you know, wrestling is in her family. Her father was a jobber. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but he was an enhancement guy for WWF in the 90s. So you could say that wrestling is in her blood. But there's something naturally hateable about her character. I think it's that stupid dance that she keeps doing every time she comes out there. Either that or wrestling fans. Here's what I think it is. You know what it is? Wrestling fans are hip to the fact that nothing good ever comes from introducing a woman into this act. You know, bad things will inevitably happen when you introduce a woman in wrestling between two friends. Only bad things can happen. And nobody wants to see Kaz and Enzo break up. So that's why they're preemptively booing this woman, because they could see down the road where this is leading. And they don't like it. Neither do I. So the match itself was nothing special. Distraction roll-up, Wesley Blake gets the pin. They're setting up, of course, an eventual tag team title match between Kaz and Enzo and Blake and Murphy. Alexa Bliss in her hometown of Columbus got a count-out victory over the NXT Women's Champion Sasha Banks after she threw her into the post on the outside, and Sasha could not make it back into the ring in time. So over was Alexa in her hometown that after winning this match, she was roundly booed. I mean, it was a non-title match. You know, cut the girl some slack. I know nobody likes a count-out, but she beat the champion, which should, in theory, earn her a championship match. And lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, that's exactly what happened, because things on this show, generally speaking, make sense. Backstage, William Regal made the match, I believe for next week, between Sasha and Alexa. Alexa is very cute. I like her a lot. But whatever the hell that standing backflip move is that she does, and I've seen her do it twice now in her last two matches, she needs to stop doing it. It just looks terrible. Then it was time for Alex Riley to rage all over Kevin Owens. Time to rage! What a goof. Even Kevin Owens mocked his stupid rage catchphrase. It was actually quite glorious. He got his ass handed to him. Riley did for much of the match. Riley did nail a spinebuster at one point for a near fall, but Kevin Owens won with his pop-up powerbomb. This was exactly what it needed to be. Give Riley some glimmers of hope in the match, and for the most part, just make it an exhibition, though, for the champion in preparation for the upcoming title match with Finn Balor. After the match was over, Kevin Owens teased giving him an apron powerbomb. I was so ready. I was rubbing my hands together. But Finn Balor walked out on stage. He warned him not to do it. And Kevin Owens acted like, okay, he was going to leave. But then he turned around and he was going to kill Alex Riley anyway. Finn Balor leapt off the stage, wiped out Kevin Owens on a dive. And in the ring, Balor nailed a dropkick on Owens into the corner. And Balor teased a double foot stomp off the top rope, but Kevin Owens bailed. And in the best moment of the entire episode, really on any WWE show this week, except maybe for the Sting stuff, but I thought this was just fantastic. He leaves the ring. Owens leaves the ring. And as he's circling the ring to, I don't know if he was looking for the belt, or he was just trying to find his way toward the exit, he happened to walk by Alex Riley's prone body on the ground, and he very casually, as he's walking by, delivered one final kick for good measure before leaving. That was awesome. I popped huge for that. So it's Balor and Owens for the title on NXT this upcoming Wednesday, and again, I think the Women's Championship match is on that show as well. And, you know, it really hit me watching this episode and listening to Triple H talk about NXT in one of the video packages as a brand. It's no longer a developmental brand. He says, we are a brand. You know, and yes, he wants to build a brand and he wants to cement a legacy for himself and make the company some extra money. But I think there is a longer term play here. And that is Triple H wants to effectively kill the indie scene. He wants to raid the indie scene and bleed it dry and kill it. Now think about it, okay? Think of all the conference calls where he talks about teaching everybody their playbook, the WWE playbook. Doesn't matter what you learn out there, where you're from, you come here, you've got to learn the WWE style. You wouldn't be on a foot, you wouldn't go from one football team to the other and use the plays from the old football team, you'd learn the new plays, right? That's the analogy he loves to use. And all the years that this guy had to hear about every indie darling under the sun and what great wrestlers they are, and Bryan Danielson is the best wrestler in the world. That used to be what people would call him. Maybe some might even call him that to this day. But, you know, when Daniel Bryan was in Ring of Honor and on the indies doing his thing, he was widely regarded as the best wrestler in the world. And I wish I remember what interview it was, but this would have been when Danielson was on top still in ROH. And Triple H made a comment in some interview to the effect of, because he was asked about that, and he said something to the effect of, can you really call yourself the best wrestler in the world when you're wrestling in front of 500 people or 50 people or something like that? I'm sure it just annoyed the crap out of him at that time. This probably would have been when Triple H was the world champion dominating Raw on top of the world, or maybe a few years after that. And you just know it annoyed him. All these little guys, you know, doing flippy moves, thinking they're wrestlers. And so now, all these years later, and I have to give him credit for this, it's actually quite genius what Triple H is doing, even though most people don't see it. He's going after all of this top-name indie talent, building a core of those guys who can help carry his brand, this brand that he's created for himself. Help create that buzz, because if there's one thing NXT has now in spades, more than maybe than any other promotion, it's buzz. Okay, there is a buzz around NXT, like it's the best thing since sliced bread, it's a hot ticket, okay, so they've created that for themselves, and, you know, he wants those guys also to help sell those tickets in many of the same markets that these guys made a name for themselves in, so they can successfully compete with the promotions in that area and take some of that business away from them. You know, these guys are a weapon for Triple H. It's not that Triple H has suddenly become a mark for the indies. You know, his goal is to kick their ass and take their fans, with the hope being that, say, 3 years down the road or 5 years down the road, when they're all weakened, he won't have to worry about where to get the next indie star from, because by then, all the new stars will be products of the Performance Center. That's the long-term goal here, not to keep taking indie guys. It's to beat the indies into submission. Take a few of their top guys now, but beat them into submission. Start now, and so a few years down the road, he won't have to worry about the indies. He won't have to look to the indies anymore. They'll have, you know, almost like a warehouse of these machines that they're creating at the Performance Center. You know, they'll be self-sustainable at that point, and they won't have to worry about going out and getting the Samoa Joes and the Finn Balors and the Sami Zayns and the Kevin Owens of the world. They won't need to look to the indies to get these guys. But he knows he can't do that without bringing some of them into the fold. That's why we're likely going to get Samoa Joe soon enough on NXT. I mean, think about it. You strip away those top four or five guys, the core of NXT, if they were to get called up tomorrow to invade the main roster, what are you left with? Kaz and Enzo? Tyler Breeze? Baron Corbin? I mean, I love Kaz and Enzo, and I'm a huge Tyler Breeze fan, but those guys are not selling out 3,000-seat buildings on the road and bringing in new subscribers to the network. Now, they do have a strong women's division, stronger than the main roster, at least, but that alone is not a draw. So, bravo to Triple H. You know, you magnificent bastard. I see what you're doing here. And if you're an indie promoter, if you're Ring of Honor especially, watch your back. There's already talk of WWE wanting the Briscoes when their contracts are up this summer. Maybe Adam Cole, who should end up in WWE. Adam Cole, I think, would be a fine fit in WWE and a great spokesman for the company. But it's all part of this longer-term play for a guy who I don't really think has much of a fondness at all for the indies. I don't think he ever did. In fact, for years, WWE thumbed its nose at the indies, thinking those guys didn't know how to work. Now they're embracing them? Come on. Open your eyes.
Hello, this is Vincent Kennedy McMahon reminding you to vote for the Sala Monster in the PodcastAwards.com sports category. Now listen, I know you're all a bunch of lazy millennial son of a bitches, so you gotta go with me right now. We're gonna do it together. Here we go. PodcastAwards.com. Scroll down on the right, see where it says sports? Now click on Sala Monster Sounds Off. Notice how Jim Ross didn't even make the top 10. Good. He's never going to be able to book my talent on that show. Anyway, click on submit at the bottom. Type in your name and email address. Oh, and you have to verify your email address.
You've got mail.
Just like that. Do it now. Don't make me kill my own creation. The Salamonster Sounds Off.
You didn't create the Salamonster Sounds Off, Vince.
Shut up. You're fired.
Let's help the Salamonster out, everybody. Vote today. PodcastAwards.com.
A few important announcements before we move on to the second half. For those of you who are attending WrestleMania in the Bay Area this upcoming weekend, Mania Crawl is the official bar crawl for fans of the Salamonster Sounds Off. It is a non-profit bar crawl in downtown San Jose that takes place only hours before the big show next Sunday. It's a great way to hang out, converse with fellow wrestling fans, commiserate with them, you know, talk about whatever you want to talk about, and just hang out with good company. I know that they've had a ton of sign-ups so far. It is free to sign up. They just like people to go on the website and sign up so they can have a sense of how many people are going to be part of this thing. So you can go to maniacrawl.com to sign up and get more information on exactly where the bar crawl will begin, where it will be going and headed. I think right now they have over 460 people signed up. They're trying to get that number up to 500, maybe even beyond. So if you haven't already signed up, if you're going to be coming out for WrestleMania, probably a fun thing for you to consider doing while you're there in the Bay Area. Also, ATA Limo Service is the official limo service for the Salamonster Sounds Off in the Bay Area for WrestleMania 31. See, I got you guys covered. You want alcohol? You got yourself a bar crawl. You want to get a good deal when you fly in to and from the airport? I got you covered. Don't worry. If you're flying in for WrestleMania, you need a lift, again, to and from the airport in San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, give them a call. Mention the Salamonster Sounds Off. You get yourself a 10% discount. It is a very professional operation that they have out there. They've got limos, they've got SUVs and town cars. Call 408-732-3600. That's 408-732-3600. Or you can visit their website, atalimoservices.com, for more information. So that way, you come in for WrestleMania or headed home, you can go out in style. And last but not least here, I just want to thank all of you for making the Sound Off a 5-star rated podcast in iTunes. And the 2 new people who left us reviews this past week for the show in iTunes, thank you very much. That helps us out immensely. You have no idea. So if you have not already done so, it doesn't take very long. It's very easy to do. It takes only a couple of minutes. Leave us a short review. You can give us a star rating, but also write a little something about the show. We pick up a lot of new listeners who are just in iTunes looking for new wrestling content, some new wrestling podcast to listen to. And when they see positive review after positive review of what you guys think of the show, it really helps them. And sometimes all it takes is that one show. They'll listen to us and you got them hooked just like that. So you can do the same thing in Stitcher as well as iTunes. But thank you to everybody who has already done so. Let's talk TNA. And we'll start on something of a sad note with TNA here, but I promise you, it is not all sad, because I actually thought this week's show, especially the main event, was just outstanding. But unfortunately, ratings-wise, Impact numbers continue to slide. You look at where they were just over a month ago, and this does not include the replay numbers. This is the first run airing of Impact since coming to Destination America. At one point at their peak, about a month ago or so, they were at 525,000 viewers. Now, 525,000 viewers is still a pretty steep fall from where they were before. They were averaging about 1 million viewers, give or take, every week on Spike. You knew the numbers were going to go down. Destination America, not nearly as strong of a network. But still, the numbers were lower. They were trending upward. They got it up to 525,000. And since then, it's been 454, 453, 366, back up to 421, and now down to 338,000 viewers for last week's show. Not this past Friday, the week before. And that was also a really good show. It was highlighted by that EC3 Rockstar Spud hair versus hair main event, which deserves some praise. I think you should go out of your way, even if you don't watch Impact, find that match. But 338,000 viewers. I mean, what does that equate to? 0.3? Maybe an 0.4? Not good. Not good. But this was a very good episode of Impact again this week. The final one overseas, the final one from the UK. I'm very sad to see them leave. the UK because they have some hot crowds over there, and now they're headed back to Orlando, and so we'll see how the crowds go there. Show open with an Ultimate X match for the TNA World Tag Team titles, the Wolves defending against the Bromans, and the team of Manic and Sonata, who of course are part of the Revolution faction with James Storm. Good match. Wolves retained the titles. They got the win, so they are still the tag team champions, at least as of this taping. Some good action in the match. I can't really say that it stood out to me as the best match on the show, because it wasn't. I reserved that for the main event. But some good action here. We had Austin Aries coming out. Apparently his briefcase being stolen. He has a briefcase for a world title shot that he can cash in at any time. He's very upset that this briefcase is now in possession of Low-Ki and the Beatdown Clan. So Low-Ki comes out with Samoa Joe. And this ends up leading to Aries proposing, since he's a betting man. I don't even know why he would do this. Because here's my thing, and this was kind of goofy about the segment. Just because Low-Ki is in possession of the briefcase, and I think even Josh Matthews mentioned this, doesn't mean that Low-Ki has himself a title match. You know, he's in possession of property that belongs to someone else. Who cares? Austin Aries earned that title shot. He has that title shot. Aries says, I want my briefcase back, and here's what I'll do. Why don't we go all in? You're the X Division champion. I have a briefcase for a world title match. We'll put everything on the line. Your title, my title shot, one-on-one. Now, why he would do this, I guess he's very confident in his ability. Seems kind of stupid to me. This guy stole your property. You're going to reward him by potentially giving him a championship opportunity. I don't know about that, but Low-Ki basically turned him down, and they attacked him, and it turned into a match between Samoa Joe and Austin Aries instead, and this was Samoa Joe's swan song in TNA. This was his final appearance after nearly 10 full years as an active TNA competitor. This was it for Samoa Joe, and I think it's very appropriate that Austin Aries would be his final opponent, since Aries was the man who ended Joe's 21-month run as Ring of Honor champion back in the day. Match ended in a disqualification when Low-Ki attacked Aries outside the ring. Back inside, Low-Ki went to hit Aries with the briefcase, but he nailed Joe with it by accident, and Aries knocked out Low-Ki to regain possession of his own briefcase. And as he's leaving, out walks a now bald Rockstar Spud, who had his head shaved by EC3 last week. He's got a bandage wrapped around his head. I mean, he was bleeding like a stuck pig the week before. There he is. He's on his way down, and he himself has a briefcase for an X Division title shot. He cashes in on Low-Ki and beats him with the Dudley Dog to win his first title in TNA. Rockstar Spud is your new X Division champion. Of course, they're in the UK. The fans were elated. They're going nuts. And Joe chased Spud to the back. So I thought that was a nice moment there. Not a particularly memorable way for Samoa Joe's run in TNA to come to an end. I'm not sure at that time they knew that this would be it for Joe. But as it turns out, it is. And Joe will soon end up wherever he ends up. We had Magnus and Bram. I thought this was the second best thing on the entire show. We come to find Magnus in the back in the middle of kicking Bram's ass. There's been a big personal issue between them now for several weeks. And Magnus is just beating the hell out of him. He beats him all the way down to the ring, into the ring. Mickie James, who of course is married to Magnus, she was there in the UK for these tapings. She comes out. She got some slaps in on Magnus. You know what? For a moment there, I actually thought that that was where this was going. I was having terrible nightmares and flashbacks to the Russo era in TNA. And if Vince Russo were still writing this show, I guarantee you that Mickie James would have come down to the ring and she would have turned on Magnus. But thankfully, that did not happen. And she was smacking around Bram a little bit. Bram was crawling on his hands and knees up the aisleway trying to get out of Dodge as the referees were holding back Magnus. But he broke free. And Magnus went up onto the ramp, grabbed Bram, and delivered a powerbomb on the ramp. This was brutal. This was a brutal powerbomb. I mean, this guy was just killed dead after this. No give, just bounced off the ramp. Ugh. And they showed it from a whole bunch of different angles, different replays of it. It looked sick. But I thought this angle was great. You know, this is what this should be. I mean, this guy made it personal, and he brought family into it, and now Magnus is just a crazy man, and he is out to destroy this man. So I like this. I thought this was really well done. Taryn Terrell, Gail Kim, an awesome Kong three-way match for the Knockouts Championship. Taryn Terrell retains her title, even though Awesome Kong dominated for much of the match. It was Gail Kim going for Eat Defeat, but Taryn Terrell countered it into a cradle and pinned her. There was a moment towards the end of this match where Taryn Terrell looked like she was losing her mind. She started to go nuts. And Taryn Terrell, she's a beautiful woman. Taryn Terrell is gorgeous, and she's got just a banging body. But there's something a little off about her. I don't know if it's the smile. When she smiles, she looks psychotic. Well, she actually went psychotic here for a moment, and it was frightening. It was just very scary. James Storm beat Matt Hardy in a hardcore match. Blue mist to Matt Hardy's eyes from Sonata, and a cowbell shot to the head by James Storm, and Hardy didn't stand a chance. Two last call super kicks it took to pin Matt Hardy. After the match, they hung Hardy from the ropes using the bull rope. Next week, Jeff Hardy is back for a cage match with James Storm. If you remember, it was James Storm who hit him in the head with a cowbell. That's when Jeff took that sick bump. I was there for that Impact taping in New York, and he's been out ever since. Of course, he can't fly to the UK since he has a criminal record. And lo and behold, they're back in the States for the next episode, and Jeff Hardy is back. Funny how that works. And the main event was Kurt Angle and Bobby Lashley. First time ever that these two have had a match for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. I love the build to this match. It was, in a lot of ways, very reminiscent of the way they built up the Joe Angle match, the cage match they had many years ago. That was on pay-per-view. This was not. But they followed the guys in the back as they were on their way to the ring. They kind of had a camera on them as they came out for the main event. Really built this up as like a big, like they built it up in a very sports-like way, which I liked. There was no comedy. There was no goofy storylines around it. It was two premier athletes going into an athletic competition for the richest prize in the company. And they went out there for 20 minutes, and I thought they had a hell of a match. I can't call it the match of the week. That's coming up in the next review I'm going to do here. But this was right behind it as number two. One of the best matches you'll find on TV all week. I thought, again, the presentation here was great. The announcing was good. The match itself was very good. Angle won with the ankle lock. The leg. Lashley had nowhere to go. No choice but to tap out. He did tap. Place went nuts. Angle wins his sixth TNA World Championship. He and Lashley shook hands. They embraced when the match was over. This felt like it could be the start of Kurt Angle's final run with the belt. I mean, you never know. But it could be. This could be it for him as far as being on top as the champion. So it's a great moment. Again, very good show overall. That's 2 weeks in a row. It's just a shame that nobody's watching. You know, nobody, aside from me and a few other people, seem to really be paying any attention to TNA. And it's just very sad. Let's talk Lucha Underground. This show was built around what I assume is the blow-off in the feud between Mil Muertes and Phoenix, who Katrina had taken a liking to. Unfortunately for Phoenix, when a man twice your size is dumped by his girlfriend or sex slave or whatever the hell she was to Mil, and she gravitates to you, you pretty much only have two options. Run away and never look back, or you stand up and fight. And fight he did in a casket match, which they cleverly referred to as Grave Consequences. I like that name a lot, actually. That was the main event, and I am totally comfortable sitting here right now and telling you all that it is my new match of the year so far in 2015. Even better than the triple threat match at the Royal Rumble, which was great and I loved it, but this was on another level. And this is on the heels also of that EC3 Rockstar Spud hair match last week on Impact, which, like I said, that match deserves an honorable mention. Lots of good wrestling out there, folks. I mean, there really is. You just need to know where to look. Match 3 in the Best of 5 series between Drago and Aerostar opened the show. They're all knotted up at one win apiece. Dario Cueto has promised the winner a unique opportunity, but he has yet to explain what that means. And given that he is a heel authority figure, if I were them, they're two baby faces, I'd be a little concerned that his unique opportunity may not be, for example, a title shot, as much as maybe it's a handicap match against the crew or something like that. Got to wrestle Cage with one arm tied behind your back. I don't know. I'd be a little leery if I were them. This was a fun match, though. Aerostar did a nesty plunge at one point during this match. It's like a truss dive, where you fall backwards, complete disregard for your own body, and just hope and pray that your opponent catches you or breaks your fall. So he did this move, only, you know, the way he did it, he didn't just fall backwards. So Drago is out on the floor. Aerostar climbs outside on the apron and does a springboard off the ropes, super high into the air, and then falls backwards with, you know, again, the expectation that Drago will be there to catch him. And Drago mostly caught him, but it looked, it just looked unbelievably stupid. It looked cool as hell, but it looked unbelievably stupid. Landed ass first on the ground, so I don't know how much of that was selling as compared to legit pain that this guy was in. Probably a mix of both, 50-50. Finish came with Drago sitting on the top rope in one corner. Aerostar goes to the opposite corner on the same side of the ring, walks across the middle rope, and delivers a top rope Hurricanrana to Drago. That's a lot of effort for nothing. Just a show-off, this guy is. And then he gave Drago a springboard splash off the ropes like Rey Mysterio does. You know, he doesn't put his arms out or anything. He just lands full force right on top of his opponent, knocks the wind right out of you. Your opponent takes the brunt of the move. And 1-2-3, Aerostar gets the win. So he takes a 2-1 advantage in the series. And they both shook hands when it was over. Great match. Great match to open the show. We got another Conan revenge video, not only showing glimpses of him beating the shit out of random dudes with his cane, but cutting in footage of him playing a game of chess with his protege, Prince Puma. And the words, "Revenge is coming," flash on the screen. "Revenge is coming for Cage," I assume that is in reference to. I love these videos. I mean, nobody in wrestling does these videos better right now than Lucha Underground. Not even WWE. I mean, these are just fantastic. Big Rick beat Sexy Star, if you remember, in an intergender match the week before to earn the right to wrestle all three members of the crew. Both of them, both Sexy Star and Big Rick, have been wronged by Dario Cueto and the crew, and they both wanted their hands on them, and so Dario put them in a match, man on woman, and Big Rick won. He is a giant man. All he had to do was literally take both hands and hold her shoulders down on the mat, and he pinned her, and he won. So his reward was a 3-on-1 handicap match this week against Mr. Cisco, Cortez Castro, and Bale. Remember, they burned his eye with a cigar, hence the eye patch that he's now sporting. So this would be his revenge. Revenge is a big theme on this show, I've noticed. I like it when somebody wrongs you, you come back and you beat their ass even worse, as opposed to coming back and pretending to be friends with them for 2 weeks, and then beating their ass. So Bale was the first one gone, then Cortez Castro. Mr. Cisco was the last guy in there with Big Rick. He tried to bail, but he was blocked from doing so by Sexy Star. She beat the hell out of him as he took a tumble down the staircase back down to the ring. Back inside, Big Rick punched Cisco in the eye, which is some nice storyline continuity there, since it was Cisco who burned Rick's eye with the cigar. That opened up Cisco. He's bleeding all over the place now. Rick lays in some very stiff forearms. And then he grabs a chair, sets it up in the ring as though he's going to take a seat. Only instead, he gives Cisco a rock bottom through the chair. Or at least that was the idea. I think the idea was that he was going to give this guy a rock bottom through the portion of the chair that you actually sit on. Unfortunately, what ended up happening here is that Cisco's head and shoulder struck the back of the chair, the point, the edge of the chair, on his way down. And so that looks like it sucked. But he got the pin, and so the crew has been vanquished, at least for now. Next week, we were told it's a title match doubleheader with Alberto El Patron defending his AAA Mega Heavyweight title in a bull rope match against Tejano. And Prince Puma will defend his Lucha Underground Championship in a rematch against Cage. And Puma has requested that it be a Boyle Heights street fight. Yes, Puma requested that it be a street fight against Cage. Someone should tell him that there are states where assisted suicide is now legal and far more painless than his death will be next week. It was now time for grave consequences. They had a little Day of the Dead ceremony with these people dressed up like voodoo witch doctors carrying the casket down to the ring. Casket had a really cool paint job on it, too, with a giant skull on it, some flowers. This was very cool. This little ceremony deal they did here is very well done, set the mood for the match. And then it was just 20 minutes of pure insanity. Muertes just absolutely destroyed this guy. From the moment that Phoenix came down second. Now, Mil Muertes is a big man. He's much bigger than Phoenix. Phoenix comes down the staircase. He's out there posing. Mil Muertes, he is in no mood to waste time here. He doesn't get paid by the hour. He wants to kill this guy. He does a tope through the ropes onto Phoenix on the floor. And that right there set the tone for the entire match. They brawled for a little bit. Phoenix did get some offense in. One of my favorite spots of the whole match was Phoenix climbs back into the ring. They've been brawling outside for a while. And Phoenix climbs back into the ring. Now, the casket had been overturned. It was not opened. It was knocked over. And Muertes is getting up on the outside. He grabs the casket. And as Phoenix comes off the ropes, he's going to do a tope. Muertes lifts up the casket, and effectively what happened here is that Phoenix lawn darted himself right into the casket. It was great. It was so good. That was awesome. So Mil Muertes starts ripping and tugging at Phoenix's mask. He is trying to rip this thing off. He's trying to rip his head off. Forget the mask. He's trying to rip his whole head off. And he's ripping and he's ripping and he rips the mask. He tears the mask nearly completely off of this guy's face. It leaves only a shred of fabric covering part of Phoenix's face. But I would say a good 85 to 90% of this guy's face was clearly visible. It would kind of surprise me, actually, because, you know, Phoenix is wrestling down in Mexico, and the mask is such a big deal down there. And doing mask matches eventually, you don't just rip someone's mask off. And this guy's now on television. And he's getting his mask ripped off right there on TV. And I actually thought they could play it up a little bit bigger than they did. Now, Matt Stryker did make the comment to Vampiro, oh, isn't that very, dishonorable? And Vamp is like, of course, it's very dishonorable. But I still feel like they didn't play this up. This should have been played up as more of a big deal. They haven't really done too much of that on the show so far as building up the masks as being this, this unbelievably big deal. Like it is down in Mexico, so maybe they could have played it up a little bit bigger, but he ripped the guy's mask. Muertes undoes the bottom rope. He takes that turnbuckle wrench weapon that we've seen Bram use in TNA, and he nails Phoenix with it, busts him wide open, then he chokes him with it. Blood is just pouring out of this kid's face, and he bites him. He bites the open wound. That is the one part of this match I could have done without. We've seen that spot in TNA as well. More recently, I think, with Eric Young and Tommy Dreamer. There's no need for that. I mean, come on. Even if I'm thinking about this in the context of a real fight, unless you're dealing with somebody, like in wrestling, all Samoans are savages, or at least they used to be. Like, if you're just a savage of a person, completely unhinged, then I guess maybe you would do something like that. If you were in a fight, you would bite at someone's bloody open wound, but... like, even in a real fight, who would do that? Like, who would voluntarily bite an open wound like that? Like, plenty of people would want to bust people open, fuck them up, but I don't know. I just didn't think that was necessary. But anyway, they're trying to get over the brutality of the match, I guess. So this guy is just bleeding all over the place. Muertes drags Phoenix up out of the ring, up the staircase now. Now they're going up the staircase. He's beating his ass along the way. They end up in the balcony. And Muertes teases that he's going to throw him off. Vampiro is going nuts on commentary. He's talking about how he's going to kill him. He's going to kill this kid. Thankfully, he doesn't get a chance. Phoenix scampers away down through the bleachers. Muertes chases after him. All the fans scatter because they're just walking through the stands because they have bleachers set up where everybody sits. They're walking down through the bleachers. I love that visual of the fans just like parting the Red Sea to let these guys pass. It just looked like complete and total chaos as this was going on. Mil Muertes gives Phoenix a powerbomb on the announce table, which does not break. It's not one of these flimsy... It's wooden, but it's not one of these flimsy tables that you would expect to break. So I'm sure that bump probably didn't feel too good for Phoenix. That elicits a chant of, "This is awesome. You bet your ass this is awesome." So Muertes drags the casket into the ring. He props it up in the corner. He ends up giving Phoenix a belly-to-belly suplex onto the casket. And Vampiro points out the huge dent. And there is, in fact, a huge dent now in the casket. He bites the bloody forehead again, which Matt Stryker refers to as tasting the sangria. I'll never look at sangria the same way again after this match. Phoenix still has some life left in him, though. He's not dead yet. Huge super kick to Mil Muertes, but the comeback is only short-lived. He gets a right hand to the face while he is sitting up on the top rope. And Mil Muertes proceeds to deliver the most devastating code breaker that I have ever seen in all my life. Phoenix, he didn't even land face first on Mil's knees. He landed head first from the top rope onto this man's knees. Just brutal stuff. Muertes is not finished with him yet. He drags Phoenix back up into the crowd. People are running for their lives. Muertes hits him in the head with a wooden chair a couple of times. Phoenix does a... He does manage a savate kick. He gets a kick off, and that knocks Mil down to the floor. Not a huge spill or anything like that. You know, he didn't take like a 10-foot tumble down, but now he's down on the floor. And Phoenix is still up in the stands. He's a few feet up. He climbs on top of the railing, and he delivers a swanton splash onto Mil Muertes. A huge spot there. People are going crazy. Another This Is Awesome chant, well-deserved. That only makes Mil Muertes even angrier. And he throws Phoenix into one of the steel grates that's on the side separating the audience from the ringside area. Smashes Phoenix's head into it about five different times. For good measure. Phoenix does come back with two super kicks that stuns Mil Muertes. Phoenix climbs on top of the guardrail, delivers a moonsault onto Mil Muertes, which gets a goddamn out of Vampiro. His word, not mine. Somewhere in here, Katrina is accidentally clotheslined by Mil Muertes and all the back and forth, which gets a shit out of Vampiro. So nice hearing unsanitized, unfiltered wrestling commentary for a change. You know, and when Matt Stryker does that, you know, one of my big criticisms of Matt Stryker, and this is why Vince McMahon took him off commentary in WWE that one time in the Rumble, I'm marking out, bro! And look, I mean, we all have our mark-out moments, and he's a fan at heart. I'm not faulting him for that, but there was just something about the way he said it that just, ugh, you know, like, not good. And Matt Stryker, when he gets really excited, has a tendency to start saying things that just make you want to cringe. He toned that down here. I thought he was very good. Vampiro, though, when he starts marking out, you know, he does it in a different way, and again, he you know, I don't know, he's coming at it from a different angle. I love Vampiro on commentary when he really gets into it like this. I just felt like it just enhanced the match so much. It was nice to get some real emotion. You know, we got real emotion out of these guys, and it wasn't too over the top. These guys, both of them, Vampiro and Stryker, they really impressed me here during this match, and they deserve a lot of credit. They really stepped up their game. I think I've really turned a corner on both of them. As an announce team. In fact, I think they may be my favorite announce team right now at this moment in all of wrestling. So this match is really where they turned a corner for me. So we end up with Phoenix back in the ring. Muertes is threatening to suplex him out onto the lid of the casket. When Katrina, who is now recovered, because the women in Lucha Underground are tougher than all of the pussies on the WWE roster who get dressed down every week by Stephanie McMahon, she takes it upon herself to lift up the lid of the casket. The only time in the entire match, almost 20 minutes now, that anyone even attempted to open the casket. And it was for the finish. I love that. I love that little attention to detail. Phoenix gets Mil doubled over in pain on the apron. He climbs to the top rope. Now again, Mil is bent over, back turned. Phoenix is up top. And he delivers a double foot stomp to the back of the head. Muertes falls into the casket. And on commentary, you know, I think Stryker was like, close the lid, close the lid. And Katrina, instead, she grabs that rock that Mil's been carrying around from the earthquake all those years ago. She gives it the lick of death, tosses it into the casket, and she slams the lid shut. And Phoenix, he's bloody, he's beaten, he's battered. His mask is in tatters, and he is your winner. And he is so happy to have won this match. He's banging on the mat, and they get that was awesome chant to cap it all off. The Day of the Dead people come back out to wheel Mil Muertes away, perhaps for the final time. I hope not. I've become a big fan of his in this feud, especially after this. I can't say enough good things about that match. It wasn't even a match. It was a war. This was a fucking war. That's what this was. Easily, by leaps and bounds, the best casket match I have ever seen. Not this year, not this decade, ever. And I know that that is somewhat faint praise given the lack of truly good casket matches that we've had over the years. But there have been a few. Like Daniel Bryan and Kane had a good one on SmackDown when it moved back to Thursdays a while back. But this match made that one look like an opening match on some barnyard indie show. It had a story, it had action, it had high spots, it had blood, it made innovative use of the casket. I mean, they did things I've never seen before in a casket match. It had a crowd that was just totally going batshit crazy, announcers that were going totally batshit crazy and cared and focused on the action and didn't laugh amongst themselves or talk about some other match that had nothing to do with this. And it had a satisfying ending that was the perfect blow-off to a feud. This right here is my match of the year so far for 2015. And it's the match that I would recommend to anybody who's never seen an episode of Lucha Underground before. So if you're one of those people and you want to check it out but you don't know where to start, this is where you start. Two thumbs up for the show. Easily the best wrestling show on TV this week. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. That includes MP3 audio questions. You can send them as an attachment. Please try to keep them to around 30 seconds or so if you do send them. And also, if you do send an MP3 audio question, please include the text of the question in the body of the email as well. It just makes life a lot easier. Before we get going on the questions, I wanted just to give everybody an update on Act Yasukawa, the Japanese lady wrestler who had her face mangled by that she-beast a while back. I talked about that whole story here on the Sound Off weeks ago, and I wanted to give an update on it since I covered it. She posted on Twitter that she finally left the hospital this week after 3 weeks. Lots of surgery. She's wearing a mask for the time being to protect her face, which is still healing. But it's nice to see that she is doing better. And here's hoping that she can make a full recovery and eventually get back in the ring, and that the other one is never allowed to set foot inside a ring ever again. Gaz wrote in to remind me that Kelly Kelly was on Sound Off 213, what this is in reference to, if you remember last week's roundtable show, we had the lovely Amanda joined us on the show, and there were some questions as to whether or not Amanda was the first female voice guest, of any kind on the Sound Off, and I completely blanked and forgot the fact that one of the people that we had the opportunity to interview in Miami a few years ago at WrestleMania was Kelly Kelly, and we did not get a chance to include the audio of that interview on Sound of 212, which has all the other interviews that we did, but we did include it on Sound of 213. So technically, I mean, maybe that's stretching it a little bit. We did have Kelly Kelly on the show. And also, we have two female voices that you hear at the end of every single Sound Off episode in our outro. So not exactly the first female voice we've ever had, but the first official, I guess, maybe kind of in-studio female guest. So I just wanted to clear that up. Dan from Hull, England, sent me a question that I've already responded back to him on, but I want to read it and answer it on the air as well. For anybody who may feel the same way that he does, I think it's worth taking the time to go through this here. I feel you sold Triple H short in Sound Off 369 and 370 when you laughed when he said he helped crush WCW. Personally, I don't feel it was a stretch for Triple H to say that. He was the number three guy in the Attitude Era behind Austin and Rock. DX was also a prominent part of the show. WrestleMania 16, which he main evented as champion, was the biggest selling pay-per-view ever to that point, even outdrawing Rock and Austin the previous year. It's also worth noting that he was probably the best ring worker in the world by some margin from mid-1999 to mid-2001. And if you remember back to 01 when he tore his quad, the WWF panicked and rushed the invasion angle. This led to the WWF annihilation of WCW because they didn't manage to pick up WCW's biggest stars. Once the invasion angle ended, wrestling's popularity cooled down to a level it will most likely never reach to or never reach again. I think if Triple H never tore his quad, WWE may have done the invasion angle correctly and not caused wrestling as we know it to die. So first of all, there's a lot to cover here. First of all, let's start with the last part. Things would have ended up exactly the same way that they did with the invasion. Don't fool yourself into believing that things would have been radically different had Triple H not gotten hurt. They had plans drawn up to keep WCW as a separate brand. They were going to give them Raw on Mondays and keep SmackDown for the WWE brand on Thursdays. And then Booker T versus Buff Bagwell happened in Tacoma, Washington, and that was the end of that. Triple H sticking around wouldn't have made a difference. it wouldn't have made a difference at all. It would have been the same outcome. Now, I'm not denying that Triple H was a great worker in 2000. He nailed it that year. I mean, he was the man. Him and Rock both, they carried that company with Austin out on the shelf. In 2000, I checked on this to make sure. I thought this was the case, but I had to check on this. In 2000, Triple H was voted Wrestler of the Year in the Observer Awards, which were voted on by your peers. So that's a big deal. And he won Wrestler of the Year that year. Okay, I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm not denying that he was at his peak. I don't know that I'd say in 99, but in 2000, absolutely. And even the beginning part of 2001 before he got hurt. He was the man. The reason I mock the WCW stuff is that it's laughable. You know, I use a baseball analogy in my email to Dan, who I hope watches baseball, although I now realize he's from England, so probably not a baseball fan. But I think other folks will get the analogy. It would be like taking a World Series baseball team with Triple H as this talented infielder, and with Austin and Rock as the star hitter and the star pitcher on the team, and then having Triple H go out there and say, "I'm the reason we won the World Series." Well, actually, you had a 270 batting average. You know, meanwhile, Austin was batting 340, and Rock was out there throwing shutouts with an ERA of 1. Now, they're obviously taking creative license with the storyline, which I get, but that doesn't make it sound any less ridiculous, which is why I laugh every time he mentions that, because it's laughable. Now, to be fair, had they gone with Undertaker against Sting this year at WrestleMania and used the same storyline with Undertaker as the one taking credit for the downfall of WCW, it would be equally ridiculous. There were many people responsible for the death of WCW. Okay, Jamie Kellner was the main person. He worked for Turner. He was a Turner executive. And when he took wrestling off TNT and TBS, Bischoff's backers bailed. He had put together a group. They were going to buy WCW for something like $75 million. Without TV, the backers pulled out, and that was the end of that. And that allowed Vince McMahon to swoop on in and pick the bones for pennies on the dollar. Before that, you want to point to other people, you could point to Eric Bischoff himself, Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Vince Russo, probably a few others. All of them had a hand in weakening that company. All of them. But if you could give anybody in WWE credit, if you want to give somebody in that company credit for aiding in that downfall, you got to give it to Vince McMahon and Steve Austin. And you could argue Mike Tyson as well. But McMahon and Austin. Okay, when that McMahon and Austin storyline really started to take off, it spooked Bischoff. Spooked him. It made him sloppy. He started to make a lot of very stupid mistakes. So, you know, did I sell the guy short? Did I sell Triple H short? Maybe it came off that way. I'm not taking anything away from his work at that time, but in terms of this storyline, I don't buy it. It's just too much of a reach for me. This whole idea that Sting waited 14 years to extract revenge on Triple H for his hand in killing WCW, I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous to me. Kingpin Jason Kaiser from Juneau, Alaska. What do you think of John Cena winning the United States Championship at WrestleMania, along with Daniel Bryan winning the Intercontinental title, setting up a rivalry that culminates in the unification of both titles? Remember, those two had a pretty damn good match at SummerSlam a couple of years back, and Cena did that match with a torn triceps. Works by legitimizing both titles, putting the new undisputed US IC title on a proven main event talent, and making the secondary title meaningful again while opening the door to keep the heavyweight champion semi-part-time, like Brock Lesnar is now, if WWE should decide to do so. For the record, I would be fine with them keeping the title on Brock Lesnar for another year if they wanted to, and build up somebody to beat him at WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. I'd have no problem with that. Now, that is if they re-sign him, and since it makes no sense for him to re-sign before WrestleMania, if he's looking to, you know, get the best deal possible, and they won't keep the title on him if he hasn't re-signed before then, that seems very unlikely. You know, so, if, for example, if Brock, by this Monday, Brock's going to be on Raw. If Brock does not sign a new contract this Monday, then that means he doesn't sign a new contract before WrestleMania. And that means that no matter what, Brock Lesnar ain't leaving WrestleMania with the title. He's got to re-sign first. See, I think if he re-signs, it makes things a lot more interesting. It doesn't guarantee that they'll keep the title on him, but there's at least a chance. He doesn't re-sign, there ain't no chance. So it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But hey, keep it on him another year. If he re-signs, keep it on him one more year. I wouldn't mind that. I'd be fine with that, provided they do this year what they should have done last year. And this is where I think they dropped the ball. And that is give him some fresh opponents to run through. Don't just give him John Cena, Triple H, and The Undertaker, and then this revolving same three or four guys. You know, I know it's going to cost you more money, but so what? He should wrestle a few more times during the year, and he should be going up against guys like Randy Orton, a guy like Sheamus maybe, a guy like Daniel Bryan. Doesn't even have to be at WrestleMania. Okay, I still even think a match with Cesaro on one of the B shows would work. It would take a few months of rehab to rehab Cesaro back to believability at that level, because he's not there now. But you could even do that. It's doable. But to your point, if they have John Cena with the U.S. title and or Bryan with the IC title, they could headline house shows with title matches even if their world champion isn't even on the card. So that works. I like the idea. We never did get that rematch between Cena and Bryan after SummerSlam in 2013. So why not do it again at SummerSlam this year? At the Barclays Center. Why not? At some point, after, you know, this would be after SummerSlam, you've got to get that title on somebody a level below those guys so they have something to fight for. But to take the next 6 months to, let's say, rehab those belts and then unify them and get it strong for the next undercard guy who holds it, I'm totally on board with that idea, 100%. Ryan from Glasgow, Scotland, for Sting's entrance at WrestleMania 31, what do you think about having a live orchestra at the stadium play his old WCW theme, just like in the WWE 2K15 commercial? I would love that, Ryan. I would love that. Just love, love, love that idea. But they're not using his WCW music. It's like when Goldberg came in. Remember that? They had to put the WWE spin on Goldberg's theme. Goldberg's WWE theme wasn't terrible, but it wasn't his WCW. It didn't have that epic feel of his WCW theme. Same thing with Sting. His WWE theme is not terrible, but it doesn't scream epic like the WCW one did. That 2K15 commercial was just fantastic. That was tailor-made, I think, for an entrance at WrestleMania. And Sting is going to have a great entrance. They put casting calls out for scarecrows and stuff. I mean, they'll do something fancy for him. I'm not, like, worried about that. But I wish they would do it. I do. And, you know, even if it was just done at the beginning of whatever fancy entrance that they have planned for him, and it kind of segues into his WWE theme. I mean, they've done stuff like that before. Why not at, like, the beginning of the entrance have the orchestra out there playing the WCW music, and then somehow it transitions into the new newer theme? I'd love that. Marco from New Jersey, being that it's WrestleMania season, would you rather have a lifetime of WrestleMania front row tickets or 4 months to do whatever you want with Lana? How is this even a real question? And why 4 months? I don't even need 4 months. Give me 4 minutes. That's all I need. The answer to this question is obvious, Marco. If you feel otherwise, you have issues. Gavin from Dublin, Ireland. I heard something about a falling out between Shawn Michaels and Triple H at WrestleMania 17, which led to them not speaking for over a year. Do you know what happened? Yeah, I don't remember the timeline on it. They did have a falling out. They did not talk for a year, over a year. It may have been Kevin Nash as the voice of reason telling one of them to reach out to the other, and then they patched things up. WrestleMania 17, okay, so what happened with that is Shawn Michaels was originally supposed to be at WrestleMania 17. He was supposed to, I believe, be the special referee for the Undertaker Triple H match, which, as it turned out, happened many years later at WrestleMania 28. But I believe he was going to be the referee. He showed up at one of the TVs leading up to WrestleMania in no condition to perform, which usually means something bad when somebody says that so-and-so was in no condition to perform. And they sent him home. I mean, he was that bad, whatever he was on, whatever was going on, they sent him home, and he was not part of WrestleMania. And I don't know if the issue stemmed from maybe Triple H either having something to do with that or maybe not standing up for him, or I don't know exactly what caused the rift, but I think it happened right after that. I believe so. Jerome, you're going down Eugenio, one of our PayPal contributors. Jake Roberts had a lot of great rivalries during the 80s and early 90s with men like Rick Rude, Andre the Giant, and Randy Savage. These feuds had a lot of time to develop and really got you invested, but why did none of them have a good blow-off match on the big stage? I know he wrestled Andre at WrestleMania 5, but that ended in a DQ, and it looked like the feud wasn't over. Why did most of his feuds just kind of fizzle out? That is a great question. I'm not really sure why. It's a valid point, though. You know, I'm trying to think which of his feuds had that big blow-off. And I don't know that he ever got that one. Let's start with Steamboat, okay? Because he and Steamboat had a little feud going in 86, okay? He never got one, I don't think, with Steamboat. Never got one with the Honky Tonk Man. Never got one with Rick Rude. Last match of theirs on a big stage was a time limit draw at WrestleMania 4. Andre, you mentioned already. DiBiase, not really. DiBiase beat him, I think, by DQ or a countout in their match at WrestleMania 6. And that was kind of the end of that. Rick Martel? Yeah, you know what? Martel might be the only one. They had a short feud. Martel blinded him on the Brother Love show, which led to the blindfold match at WrestleMania 7, which people crap all over. You know, was it a good wrestling match? No, I actually liked that match. And there have been other blindfold matches that WWE has done since that have sucked. I didn't think this sucked at all. I thought for what it was great. The fans were into it. You got the big payoff with the DDT in the end. I always liked that match. Or at least didn't hate it as much as other people did. But that actually got a payoff at WrestleMania. So Jake won that match. And I think after that, it was the feud with Earthquake. That was in 91. Yeah, it was the feud with Earthquake in 91. That was where Damian got squashed. I still remember the Quake Burgers segment on Primetime Wrestling. That was great. Not quite as evil as Big Boss Man feeding Al Snow his own dog, but still pretty messed up. You know, but even then, it never went anywhere. I don't remember there being any sort of televised blow-off between Jake and Earthquake. I can't recall a single match on television that those two guys had. And we had the Randy Savage feud, which is my all-time personal favorite, but anybody who listens to the show, you already know that. They did have a blow-off match on Saturday night's main event early in 92, but it was so anticlimactic. It was a five-minute match, and Savage won with the elbow. It didn't feel like a blow-off, you know? I guess it was, but it wasn't the blow-off that feud really deserved. You know, one of our listeners, Jay, emailed me the other day, and he asked me if there were any WrestleManias that I would rebook if I had the chance. And WrestleMania 8 was one of those WrestleMania. And I love WrestleMania 8. In fact, I would say WrestleMania 8 may be my favorite WrestleMania. It's just a sentimental thing. I'm not saying it had better matches than WrestleMania 17 or anything. I really love that show. But WrestleMania 8 was one of the ones that I would rebook. And WrestleMania 11 and 16 were the other two. And as much as I love the Savage-Ric Flair match, that whole feud, she was mine before she was yours, like, it really should have been Randy Savage and Jake Roberts in a loser leaves town match, since Jake was leaving anyway. And I know that Jake leaving may have been a last minute decision, a contract thing, whatever. But that would have been the appropriate stage, I think, for a match like that. I mean, for God's sakes, the guy struck Elizabeth in the face. He slapped her right in the face. We had never seen that before. And it doesn't get any more evil than that. I mean, Elizabeth, of all people, I mean, come on, of all people to harm, right? So, all that kind of stuff happened in the snake bite on the arm, but they blew it off in a five-minute match on TV instead and did the angle where Undertaker turned babyface backstage. So, you know, looking back on it, I came up with Rick Martel and maybe Randy Savage. That's it. Those are the only feuds that really got proper blow-offs that Jake ever had in WWE. But, you know, I bet if you went back and looked at other guys, Jake would not be the only one. There were a lot of feuds that were started on TV that went nowhere, or just led to a bunch of house show matches. Even Flair and Piper. When Flair came in, he was feuding with Hogan, but he was feuding with Piper too, but I can't remember him and Piper ever having a match on TV. I know they had a bunch of matches. I know that they had a bunch of house show matches. There may be one even on a Coliseum video somewhere. Well, maybe not. I can't recall any videos that had a match with them. They did an angle. I mean, that is a great example. They did an angle when Flair first debuted. It was on Challenge, and you had Roddy Piper, Randy Savage. Was Savage there? I think Savage was there. And Vince McMahon were on commentary. And Flair is coming out, and he looks over. He sees Piper, and he gets all smug and cocky, and he goes over. And Vince is like, don't react. Just leave it alone. Don't do anything you're going to regret. And Piper's just sitting there, back turned, and Flair's kind of pushing him. And then he finally, like, nails him, or, like, really shoves him. And that led to the whole angle where Piper took a swing with a wooden chair and Vince McMahon took a bump. That's the first bump I ever remember Vince McMahon taking, was that chair shot. So this was an angle that happened on TV, but I don't think they ever had a match on television, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. And I mean, it's not like they didn't have television back then. You know, I mean, they had the syndicated shows on the weekend. They had 2 hours of primetime wrestling, which was the precursor to Raw. So when Raw started, Raw was an hour. They actually had more television time beforehand with primetime. Primetime was a two-hour show. They had All American Wrestling. They didn't have as many hours of television as they do now. But it's not as though they had no TV, so I don't have any good answer on why that happened. And finally, Blake from Alabama. With Sting now in WWE, it got me wondering who would be on the Mount Rushmore of WCW. Mine would be Ric Flair, Sting, DDP, and Goldberg. I excluded Hogan, Hall, and Nash because of their previous affiliation in WWE. And I did not watch WCW much before the 90s, so I feel these would be some of the best of the homegrown talent that WCW had. Homegrown, yes. But the most influential guys are the ones who should go on Mount Rushmore. And so for me, I agree with everybody that you mentioned except for DDP. You just cannot leave Hulk Hogan off there. If it comes down to Hogan and DDP, there is no contest. I know Hogan was a WWE guy first, but the impact that he had on that company, good and bad, and business-wise, whether you like the guy or not, you can't deny it. Even as red and yellow Hogan, he had a big impact on business. He had a big impact on pay-per-view buys. You can't leave him off, you know? So it has to be Flair, Sting. I'd say Hollywood Hogan, if you just want to look at the Hollywood run and the impact that he had and the whole NWO thing. Yeah, I would go with Flair, Sting, Hollywood Hogan, and Goldberg would be the Mount Rushmore of WCW. And that's it for the mailbag. Keep sending me those questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. I will be back on Heartbeat Radio with Bruce Hart talking WrestleMania 31 this Tuesday, March 24th. 9 p.m. Eastern Time. If you can't listen live, you can check it in the archives the next day. blogtalkradio.com/heartbeatradio. That's heart like Bret Hart, not heart like the word heart. I'll also be taping an interview with the Fans podcast this week. That's going to be included as part of their WrestleMania show. I'm not sure when that will drop, but I will let you guys know. And again, I will be in California starting on Friday for WrestleMania weekend. Now would be a very good time, if you are not already doing so, to follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster, and on Instagram, too. My handle on there is TheSolomonster. Live updates, photos, maybe even some videos. I'll be tweeting up a storm, I'm sure, so follow me on there. Don't forget, we got our Mania Madness sale. It kicks off this Tuesday at midnight. It runs all week until the following Tuesday at midnight, so March 24th. Straight through until midnight on the 31st, exclusive to our store on ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff, the Mania Madness sale. You get 10% off your entire order. However many shirts you want to order, you get 10% off. Use the promo code SOLO, S-O-L-O, at checkout. Just punch it in the discount code field, and you will get 10% off your order for that 1 week only in celebration of WrestleMania. And one thing I forgot to mention earlier because of all the other stuff that we had to promote and talk about is Audible. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is our URL. And when you use that URL, if you punch it in, it's going to take you to the main page. And from there, if you sign up for a free Audible trial, 30-day trial, you get yourself one free audiobook. So even if you immediately turn around and cancel, you try it for most of the month, you don't really want to stick with it, you cancel, you get to keep your one free audiobook that you cash in. It could be a book about anything. As long as it's on Audible, you can grab it. You don't have to pay for it. You get it for free. You own it. It belongs to you. But when you sign up using our link, we get a little kickback. It helps the podcast out. You would be helping us out immensely by using it. There are a ton of wrestling books up there. There is the new book. Shawn Michaels just came out with one. Chris Jericho's third book that came out late last year, which is fantastic. I recommend it. Two thumbs up, really, on all of Jericho's books. You might be able to get the other ones on there, too. I'm not sure. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I want to get a few more signups for the month of March here to boost those numbers up. We're doing pretty well. I want to get that up a little bit higher. So please spread the link. Anybody can use it. It helps the podcast out, and I am very much appreciative of that. So we're going to wrap up episode 374 here. That was a big one. That's what she said. And we'll be back next weekend with another roundtable show. Myself, Noah Mark, we will be, along with Brian Blade, and the rest of the crew will be in town for WrestleMania. I would expect that we might do that show on Saturday, maybe Friday. I'm not quite sure yet. You'll have to just follow along on Twitter. I'll let you guys know when that show will go up and if there will be a post show as well. And again, if you have or know of someone who has a spare WrestleMania ticket or is looking to sell one off, get in touch with me, tweet me, email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I'm going to be looking at getting a Mania ticket because as of right now, I do not have one. But I do hope and expect to be there. So until next time, be well, stay safe. Hope to see some of you in California for the festivities next weekend. And we will be back with more Sound Off very soon. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Whatever happened to real men on this show? Can you imagine, in any other era of WWE, dressing down your top star the way that Stephanie McMahon did to John Cena on Monday night? They've done this with Cena, they've done this with Bryan, they've done it with Dolph, they've done it with Ryback, they did it with Rollins. Remember the infamous episode where Big Show was on his knees in the middle of the ring crying for his job? Tears are just streaming down this guy's face. This guy's 7 feet tall, 450 pounds, he's in the ring crying. He's a giant. Yeah, he's a giant pussy.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.